Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code POOL at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code POOL at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code POOL. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Dr. Robert Malone. It's Robert, right? I got his name right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool. He was on the Joe Rogan podcast. It was a fascinating episode. And I will start this show off by saying something very simple. If you support shutting down the voice of scientists, you don't believe in science. That is the opposite of science. Dissenting voices must be heard. So they did this podcast. It was uploaded to YouTube. I don't think it wasn't uploaded by Joe, as far as I know, but it did get deleted. In that episode, Malone talks about how he's been banned from Twitter. And for what reason? I guess COVID misinformation. He mentions Getter. Well, only a few days after this show, Joe Rogan posts that he is signing up for Getter, which I don't think he's the first person to make this jump. I mean, a lot of people were already on Getter. It's basically a Twitter rival. But many people immediately started setting up Getter accounts because you've got to have somewhere to go. And the challenge is for whatever the faction is that's not the left, moderates, independents, post-liberal, conservative, we need a word for it, because the right isn't necessarily correct. There's certainly left-wing individuals who agree with free speech and things like that who are more on the side. Like Joe Rogan's not a right-wing guy, you know what I mean? Hmm. But these are people trying to find a place where they can congregate in the event they do get banned from Twitter. So now we're seeing a major boom in Getter, 150,000 new users in one day. I think they fear Joe Rogan, especially with podcasts like this. I got to be honest. I struggled to find the episode. No joke. We'll get into all this stuff. But I think this is a really big deal. We've also got some data on Joe Rogan's ratings as it relates to all of the big mainstream cable channels. And suffice it to say, his ratings are like 3 to 10 times or even more larger than mainstream TV shows. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Rand Paul. He's dropping YouTube. He says, I'm not going to be on this platform. Crazy story out of Australia. A man immolated himself in protest of the COVID mandates. And then we got a surge in Democrat retirements. Just getting worse. Another Democrat announced they would not be seeking reelection. I think this is like 2 for the past several days or whatever. So it's going to be a crazy year, my friends. Let me just say it's 2022. Last year was an off year. Okay. There were some elections, sure. 2022 is the midterms. It's going to be all out, balls to the wall, censorship, smears, harassment, everything you name it. Anyone who challenges the establishment is going to be targeted with all of this stuff. It's everybody. I don't care if it's left or right, whatever. Now, for the most part, I think the establishment, be it establishment Republicans, but mostly the Democrats, they're going to be playing dirty. You know that they have allies in big tech. We saw what they did with the Hunter Biden laptop. They're going to be coming for everyone on this show. They're going to be coming for you guys. You're going to get banned for nonsensical things like saying learn to code. So pay attention to what's going on. And that's why this story about Getter is so important. Joining us to talk about this and much, much more is Zed Jelani. How's it going, man? You want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, this is my second time on Tim's show, and I'm happy to be here again. Been a journalist for about a dozen years. I worked at Think Progress, The Intercept, a few other different outlets. And today I freelance, and also I have a Substack at inquiremore.com. I write about politics and current affairs. Follow a lot of the same issues that Tim does, and generally try to stay on the beat of underreported stories and sort of picking apart narratives, I think, that are out there that, you know, aren't factually supported, and kind of getting again, getting that news out there that I think that, you know, you're not necessarily gonna see it on the CNNs of the world, so.
Cool. Right on, man. Thanks for hanging out. We got Luke.
There's a lot of crazy narratives out there, so I'm really interested in this conversation. Zed, thanks so much for coming, and I would just like to say today I'm wearing a shirt in honor of the 700 sheep near Hamburg, Germany that just took part in a propaganda effort. The shirt reads, "Y'all went from sheep to lab rats." This is definitely not a shirt for the timid. It's a great conversation starter, and you could get yours on thebestpoliticalshirts.com. And because you do, I'm here. Thanks for having me. This should be a great conversation.
I always love sitting down with Zed because he always has really interesting things to say, and he has like such a wide range of knowledge. So I'm stoked for this evening. I always love Monday nights. You guys think I'm crazy, but I do like work. So let's get going.
Ian is not here. His flight on the way back went through a rift in the time-space continuum. However, Ian at the time was asleep, and only the people who were awake vanished as they passed through this rift. We got word that he and a small group of people fought off gigantic walnut-looking monsters that devour time and were able to get back in the plane and take off, go back to sleep by lowering the air pressure, and they've woken. Now they're going to be landing, so Ian should be back by around 9 p.m. Special bonus points to anyone who knows what that was a reference to when you super chat us that, because I haven't seen that. I'll leave it there. You guys.
I do, but thank you, Don. Thank you there, Don Lemon. Appreciate that.
Yeah. That wasn't a reference to Don Lemon.
I know. It's a reference to something else.
Yeah.
But Don Lemon made another prediction on national television.
It's good stuff, too.
That was also
Ian's plane
loony.
Was not sucked into a black hole.
It was not, no.
All right, before we get started, head over to TimCast.com, become a member, and help support all of our journalism. We've got this report here, Rally Against Jew Hatred in Brooklyn. ELAD on the ground. We have on the ground reporters, and it's thanks to you guys as members that we can do more of this, and we want to keep doing more. We want to hire more people. We've already recently hired another journalist. We're looking at ramping up our fact-checking organization this year, all thanks to you for supporting us. As a member, you'll get access to exclusive members-only segments of the TimCast IRL podcast. Those go up at 11 p.m. Monday through Thursday, as well as a ton of other bonus content like Tales from the Inverted World. These are mystery stories and investigative stories. In fact, one of the latest stories is about a serial killer who is currently active in Long Island. So it's not politics mainstream news beat, but this is pretty serious stuff. It's not always, but stuff you definitely might, you'll probably want to hear about if you're concerned about, I don't know, serial killers. But there's also other stories, ghost stories, mysteries. And don't forget to like this video right now, subscribe to this channel, share the URL to this video wherever you can. That is the most effective way you can help us combat or compete against the mainstream media and their narratives and their lies. We don't have those big marketing budgets. We don't have big billboards everywhere. We can't afford to work deals to get this show put in airports. But if you guys really do like this show and believe in it, sharing it wherever you can, they can try and silence that. But for the most part, it usually breaks through, and we appreciate the support. Let's get into that first big story. Joe Rogan leads move to Getter after Twitter bans Dr. Robert Malone, Rep. Marjorie Taylor Greene. Rogan's move comes after Twitter banned Rep. Marjorie Taylor Greene and Dr. Malone for COVID misinformation. But I don't think Joe Rogan signed up for Getter because of Marjorie Taylor Greene. I think he did it mostly because Dr. Malone told him on his show he was banned, and then he signed up for Getter. Now, I want to make one very important point before we get into all of this stuff. Joe Rogan is the biggest podcast in the world, even still after leaving YouTube and iTunes, still the biggest podcast. I got to say, I see his numbers put out by Spotify compared to Nielsen ratings. Spotify is saying, this is Luke Rutkowski on Twitter.
I heard about this guy before.
He's pretty good. Joe Rogan Experience, 11 million viewers per show. Wow.
Holy cow.
11 million. That is substantially larger than what we get on this show across the board.
True.
And we could only hope to ever reach that level of viewership. But that's Joe Rogan. Of course it is. When he says, hey, guys, I'm kind of worried about the censorship, I'm going to get up on Getter, there's going to be a lot of regular people who aren't deeply entrenched in politics who are going to do the same. And this is huge in the battle against censorship. It could be good. Could be bad. Now, it is good, but there could be some bad to it. I'll say this. A lot of people who are being censored, who have been banned, have found a voice on other platforms like Parler, Gab, Getter, etc. But the big tech, you know, collusion comes after all these platforms. We saw what happened to Parler. We saw what happened to Gab. Gab starts building its own infrastructure. Getter may experience something similar. But at the very least, for the time being, if you get banned from Twitter, that's somewhere you can go and see many people talking about, you know, certain ideas. It's not perfect. But I think coming into this year, the big risk is that if we have two separate echo chambers and people can no longer communicate at all, well, then I think the divide in this country is going to get way, way worse.
Absolutely. We're having one of the key instrumental figures that created the mRNA vaccine. We're having congressmen and women being banned from expressing their dissent towards the narrative, and they're getting axed. They're getting their ability to talk to their constituents removed away from them by what power, what godlike authority, big tech social media that literally just deemed it to be not appropriate for the general public to hear. I'm sorry. I mean, once you start censoring information, once you stop eliminating the people to even have a debate or an honest conversation, you're on the wrong side of history. And what Joe Rogan has done is he has put people who have been censored in a way where their voice could actually be heard. They could actually release their ideas to the general public. And this is a huge step against the big tech social media monopolies. And this is why I joined Getter, because, and again, I don't even know much about Getter. I still need to do my research. I still want some kind of reassurances that Getter won't become the next Twitter. But still, this is a swell of movement of people saying, hey, this is crazy. I can't deal with this. I want free speech.
Zed, did you sign up for Getter?
I have not signed up for Getter yet. I am on Rumble, which is a YouTube competitor.
Yeah, yeah, we use Rumble.
Moment, so, you know, I think something important to acknowledge here. I think a lot of people, you know, they look at these decisions by these companies and they say, well, they're private companies. They're behaving and they get to control who their users and their customers are, just as any store or any business organization would. Something people have to understand is that over the past few years, the government has increasingly leaned on these companies. You know, Democrats will bring these people before hearings. They'll bring up inflammatory content. They'll talk about this. And they'll basically ask the companies why they aren't censoring more. Now, the government, of course, has various regulatory powers it could impose on these companies that could, you know, cause them profit. That could reduce their market share. That could even break them up.
Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality. The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/Tim. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/TIM.
And I think that a lot of what these companies have been doing over the past few years, for instance, what they did with the Hunter Biden stories, where Facebook and Twitter were throttling the story, making it difficult to even click the link to go and read the New York Post story about President Biden's son. I think a lot of what they're doing that preemptively to avoid potential regulation from the Democrats. So it's not so simple as private companies simply making enlightened decisions, you know, playing hall monitor on speech. They're actually doing this with political aims in mind, in that they know that this party is in power in Washington right now, so they have to keep them happy. And I think there's a lot of Democrats. I think there were some Democrats who were interviewed about it, like Pramila Jayapal, who were very much in favor of Marjorie Taylor Greene being removed from Twitter. They probably wanted them to go further than that. So I think, you know, you have to understand this whole thing's an ecosystem. It's not just a company acting in a vacuum. And I think Facebook did a 24-hour suspension of Marjorie Taylor Greene almost immediately after Twitter removed her, right?
In concert.
I would actually disagree with you. I don't think big tech is afraid of politicians. I would say politicians are afraid of big tech, especially with the amount of money that they put into the lobbying business. I think they're the biggest, one of the biggest lobbying efforts in all of Washington, D.C., and they control a lot of power because they get to see everything that politicians do. Now, you don't need the CIA anymore. You got Facebook literally knowing when you're going to take a dump. So if they know that, they're tracking and databasing all these politicians and probably have a list of dirty laundry against them, and they could go to them and be like, hey, we know what you Googled. We know what you looked into. We know the private videos you watch on this and this website. We could release that to the general public unless you do what you want us to do. So I think big tech, especially with how they were working with the intelligence intelligence agencies from their beginning are the ones really in charge here from my perspective. But again, I might be wrong.
Think about how insane it is to take down an actively sitting politician, right? Twitter banning Marjorie Taylor Greene. I mean, first of all, banning Trump. That was crazy. People don't realize this, man. You get the CNNs, you get all these networks being like, an insurrection occurred, so we must remove the current president from all of these social media platforms so he can't communicate. He's not going away. His followers aren't going away. This is not shutting anything down. It's only proving to the people who don't like you, you're as bad as they said you were. Mm-hmm. If you've got people, if they're telling us that there's an insurrection, you've got people who genuinely think the Democrats and the neocons are like evil and need to be removed or whatever. And then you decide that the one person they do like, Trump, is going to be removed from public discourse. That just makes it worse. It makes it substantially worse. I think it was George Washington. There was this, I'm blanking on the guy's name, but there was a conspiracy. Do you guys remember this? Like after the revolution, America couldn't pay its debts and a bunch of soldiers weren't paid. So there was like some insurrection and George Washington was like, no, we got to let these guys go. If we prosecute or persecute them, it'll only make things worse.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember the full details. And, you know, we talked about it on the show once, but that's what a lot of people talked about back during the insurrection. People, much smarter than I, mind you, they said perhaps amnesty for these people is the best way to do this, to say, look, We are one country. We need to come together. We don't want to make these problems worse. Instead, the establishment, the intelligence agencies, the DOJ have all done everything in their power to make this as bad as possible. And it's not just the DOJ. It's not just the government. It's the big tech companies. Now, removing Marjorie Taylor Greene for what? Well, COVID misinformation, they said, and Dr. Malone. Now, Marjorie Taylor Greene's not a scientist, but she is a leader in the federal government. They may not like that she is, but she is. Dr. Malone is a scientist, a dissenting one. When you ban dissent, that's the opposite of science. They're just proving to everyone the problem is bad or as bad or worse than they realized.
And let's remember something. When like-minded people gather together, they tend to become more extreme, right? Mm-hmm. So it was in the past, it would have been a matter of, you know, Dr. Robert Malone's on Twitter. He's on YouTube. He's discussing these things with other scientists. You can weigh what he says against other people. The truth can win out that way, right? Let's say someone's a huge fan of Marjorie Taylor Greene. Now they're just going to go watch her on Rumble or view her messages on Getter. They may not see someone debating with her, discussing with her. They might grow even more kind of closed-minded in that direction, right? They're reducing contact between people of different ideologies because they're just deciding certain ideologies are verboten, that they're forbidden to be spoken. They're ending up segmenting and segregating people off, and that may actually create more extreme echo chambers in the long run. And you know, I think that this, again, I think because of all the political considerations that are happening right now, I mean, these companies tend to be run by more left-leaning people. They have a more left-leaning government in D.C. that they are somewhat managing or dealing with right now. I don't think they think three steps ahead when it comes to a lot of this stuff, right? And I think, again, what you pointed out in terms of those historical examples, we've seen that many times throughout history, not only with George Washington, who cited after the American Civil War, there was a long process of reconciliation between the North and the South that wasn't resolved maybe for 100 years.
I don't think it was ever resolved.
After World War II, I think that many of the Allies, you know, they kept actually a fair bit of the German leadership. Of course, many of them were brought to trial and executed, but some of the German leadership was maintained. A big part of the Japanese leadership was maintained. And I think they did that because they didn't want to throw those societies into a further civil war. They didn't want to make them feel marginalized and repressed. They wanted to say, hey, look, this war was wrong, we defeated you, but we're going to bring you into the community of nations now, right? They wanted to make them feel included. And I think that mostly worked with Germany and Japan and Italy and these Axis powers. And I think that has generally been the wiser path to take here. And I think that, in a few days, I imagine with the January 6th anniversary, we're going to see a lot of mulling over this. New York Times already said every day is January 6th now, right? You can't move past it. You can't reconcile with these people. You can't try to come back to a normal country. They seem to be wanting there to be some kind of civil disturbance or war, but it has no endpoint and it has no goal either, right? Because what does this conflict entail even? It's just a matter of permanent grievance or resentment.
Divide and conquer. I think it's deliberate. When you look at these echo chambers, they're not only created with censorship, they're created with the algorithms that promote people from just having their views regurgitated back to them by people who have the same political ideology. And I think it's meant so we do fight each other. So of course we don't really truly look at what's causing our problems. We look at each other and see That's the problem. Our common man, our neighbor. We should go after him. We should fight them because they think not like me. And again, that type of ideology is absolutely fascistic and it's disgusting. And it's something we need to fight back on as much as we can right now.
Take a look at this this tweet here from everyone's favorite CNN personality, Brian Stelter. He says, "Watch how this Twitter user mocks reporters for talking candidly about the trauma associated with the Capitol attack." I just quote tweeted it and wrote trauma. The trauma.
I like the first reply to it. I think
first,
that's pretty.
Yeah, that's perfect.
The first reply. Oh, it's Stewie rocking
Stewie,
back.
Yuck.
Stewie from Family Guy. The trauma. Okay, here's what you need to understand. If you are on the ground during these like riotous moments, it can be stressful. But for many of us, we've been through tons of them. I've been, you know, Brazil, I think, was one of the most intense. Thailand was probably the scariest because people were actually killing each other there. But to say that in any way foreign conflict, like there are foreign war reporters and conflict reporters much braver than I, much smarter than I, who have traveled to many countries facing real dangers who don't have trauma. And many do. Don't get me wrong. For journalists in America who are not on the ground to be discussing their trauma over an event they did not witness, I think it just goes to show you how insane the whole system is getting. But I want to keep the subject on what's going on with the gutter. We have this story. This is really funny. From July of this year, the newest MAGA app is tied to a Bannon-allied Chinese billionaire. Getter has existed as a Chinese language social media network linked to Guo Wengui. Wengui, how you say that? It was unveiled as a new platform by Jason Miller on Thursday. They say, on Tuesday, Guo Wengui, an exiled Chinese billionaire who runs a Chinese language media network with Trump advisor Steve Bannon, posted a video on his his site GNews, reminding viewers to back up their social media posts on Getter, saying, I guess the site was going to get wiped or something. 2 days later, Donald Trump's former advisor Jason Miller announced that Getter, a Chinese language site for dissidents opposing the Chinese Communist Party, would soon launch as a pro-MAGA free speech social media platform. Now, I don't know much about who this guy is, all right? But there have been a lot of people concerned about the move to Getter because of the association with Guo Wengui. I would like to show you this music video from YouTube where it's only got 63,000 views. It's from October of 2020. And it's this guy. Is that who it is? It's Guo. Is this who this guy
is? I believe so. Yeah.
And he's on a boat smoking a cigar and he's like, CCP, you're over. And he's doing like boxing moves.
Oh my gosh.
That, you know what, man? I can appreciate the attempt, you know, culture jamming, all that stuff. But, what is it? Who is this guy? Like, what is this?
I don't know if this could be considered boxing moves, but, he's been a big supporter of the Hong Kong movement. And of course, he also hangs out routinely with Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon is seen with him a lot. Other than that, I don't really know much about him. But just like, you know, anyone, people should obviously be looking into who's who and who's controlling what. Because again, when you're running a big tech social media company, you have a lot of power. You got a lot of authority and not a lot of people realize when something's free, you're usually the product. How Getter is going to treat their product, their customer base is going to be interesting because obviously this guy has a lot of money. I don't think maybe money motivates him. Maybe it's something else, but I think only time will tell. I'm skeptical of everything, to be quite honest with you personally myself.
Are you familiar with this guy?
No, I honestly, beyond the music video.
Oh, you've seen the music video before?
I think he's known to be a character, but I don't know anything special about him.
I mean, I'll say this. There are a lot of people talking about Getter banning people, banning, you know, like America First. They reportedly banned the phrase groiper. And I saw that and people were like, look, this platform is going to ban people the same as all, you know, same as Twitter and all these other platforms. So I went on Getter and I typed in, did they really ban the word groiper, to see if it was banned.
Right.
It posted and people responded saying it's posting. So I don't think that they did ban it. Maybe they temporarily did or something happened. However, their rules are the same as Twitter for the most part. Like, obviously not the community guidelines, but the terms where they're like, we'll ban you if we decide to. I believe Getter absolutely will be banning people. 100%. Of course they will. They have to. You can't have criminal images, you know, like, I don't want to get too explicit on what those kind of images could be. But Ian, who's not here tonight, has experience when he was working for Minds of having to go through these images, which are like, many of which are explicitly criminal, and you have to remove them and you have to ban the users. However, I think it'll go a little bit beyond that. I think Getter probably will ban people for, you know, I don't want to say completely political reasons, but for fairly political reasons. I just think the difference is Twitter is obviously a left-wing platform, hands down. their rules on misgendering, 100% left-wing perspective. The fact that it would ban a conservative for holding a conservative view, well, there you go. The same is true for all these big tech companies. I think Getter wants to do the exact same thing, but just on the right. Here's the problem. The right typically likes to engage with the left and challenge ideas. Mm-hmm. The left generally prefers echo chambers where they're told what to think. Now, I know a lot of people on the left will say, that's not true, that's not true. We've already been through multiple iterations of this, where Jack Dorsey himself said, in 2016, left-wing journalists were only following left-wing journalists, but right-wing journalists were following both left and right-wing journalists. We've looked at the ground news bias charts on a variety of users, and you can see that people associated with the right get their news from either the right and the left, maybe a little bit more the right, and people on the left, it's 95% left-wing news sources. The left typically stays in an echo chamber. This is why when Lauren Boebert was making fun of Donald Trump for saying true and non-shabbat of pressure, the left was confused and didn't know what she was talking about, because these people just live in an echo chamber. That means Twitter is perfect for the left. They don't want to leave their echo chamber. They want to be in it. But Getter won't work for the right because the right wants to engage with people.
Yeah. Does Getter have a code of conduct? And I think a lot of people are asking the question, what guarantees do we have that Getter will stand up for the principles of free speech? Obviously, if there's criminal speech, that's a matter of something that the authorities deal with. But when it comes to free speech, when it comes to political discussions, when it comes to even criticizing the CEO, will that be allowed? Mm-hmm. That's a very important question that needs to be asked. I think it would be interesting to talk to this CEO. I don't know if you would be down to kind of have him on, but I would have a lot of questions
absolutely.
And guarantees. Definitely. And make someone even sign a contract on air being like, I pledge to never censor free speech ever, or I will chop off my left hand or whatever.
I feel like a lot of these companies, they write guidelines and they write terms of service in that give them some wiggle room to in the future, if they feel like they have to panic and censor or panic and start moderating things, they'll start doing it. Like Substack, for instance, I don't think they've really cracked down at all on basically anything.
I think Rogan and Tim Dillon were talking about them cracking down on some people.
Well, the thing within their guidelines, they say like something like, "Oh, we don't allow hate speech or whatever," and like that's the most
Getter?
Nebulous cat. Not Getter,
Getter
Substack.
Does.
Substack says that.
Oh yeah, I'm reading Getter right now. They ban hate speech.
Well, that's the thing. That's like the most nebulous category, right? Yeah. That kind of becomes whatever you decide it is. And so if you have that within your terms of service, I feel like you're kind of leaving in it like a valve for yourself. Like if you feel like something gets too like toxic or too spicy, you can like flip that valve and you can be like, okay, that was in our terms of service. But the thing is, they don't really define that, right? So like you don't know what their limits are or what they will.
Let me read this. And I might have to be, I'll just read it. Getter holds freedom of speech as its core value and does not wish to censor your opinions. Nonetheless, you may not post on or transmit through the service any unlawful, harmful, threatening, abusive, harassing, defamatory, libelous, indecent, vulgar, obscene, sexually explicit, pornographic, profane, hateful, racially, ethnically, or otherwise objectionable material of any kind, including any material that encourages conduct that would constitute a criminal offense, give rise to civil liability, or otherwise violate any law, rule, or regulation of the laws applicable to you or applicable to the country in which the material is posted. For example, this may include content identified as personal bullying, child abuse, attacking any religion or race, or content containing video or depictions of, oh man.
Bad stuff.
Yeah, bad stuff. We don't want to, we'll get in trouble. Let's just say ISIS-related stuff. That's probably worse, but whatever. You know what? Screw it. I'm done with this. Beheadings. There you go. There's the word. We reserve the right and our sole discretion to reject, refuse to post, or remove any posting or other user-generated content, including private messages from you, or to deny, restrict, suspend, or terminate access to all or part of the interactive community at any time for any or no reason without prior notice or explanation and without liability. Now, I tell you this. That sounds exactly, if not worse than Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, or otherwise. The point is, the people running Getter are the inverted political perspective as compared to, Getter is the inversion of Twitter, effectively. Same as Parler's other platforms. All that means is we're going to have parallel political discourse. If you want to talk about right-wing stuff, they'll be like, oh, that's not hateful. And then on the left, if you want to talk about left-wing stuff, they'll be like, yeah, that's fine. Getter is probably, in my opinion, substantially less likely to censor you for having his opinions, but they have the same rules. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, that's very vague legalese language here that could be interpreted and used in many different ways, especially if they have pressure from the ESG. What is it? The EGS? No, the Environmental Social Governance score? ESG score. Yeah. Especially if they get pressure from kind of institutional powers or bigger players out there or advertisers. It's going to be interesting to talk to the guy who's running it. I would love to do that, and I would love to ask more serious questions and again, have some more kind of things where we could put things on paper and have guarantees guaranteeing free speech.
Dude. Look, man, they have to have these things because for a variety of reasons.
Exactly.
Namely, they'd be banned from all the app stores because of the Silicon Valley monopoly on it. So clearly Getter's trying to navigate this, but you can't do it. You can't do it. It's not just the platform like Getter. It's the fact that Parler got removed over lies. Mm-hmm. Gab was smeared and they went after their infrastructure over lies. So Getter is trying to play within the bounds. It's like you're in the Matrix, you know? They say in the Matrix you can sort of bend the rules, but you're still bound by the same rules. That's what it is. Getter is still within the Silicon Valley ecosystem. They're going to be dealing with the same problems. It'll be a little bit better, but for the most part, I don't know how much better. I mean, MINDS, it's always hard to say that word, MINDS, because people think you're saying MINES, might be better, but a lot of people complain about their user interface being really difficult to use compared to like Getter or other platforms. I don't have all the answers. I don't know if Getter's the answers.
I don't know. I mean, it might be a matter of like, there are people who talk about, you know, crypto technology and decentralization and things like that, that will free people up to use these technologies. Like, I don't know, like, you can't have like a giant Signal group for like, you know, a million people to make it a social network. But like people use Signal right now for like end to end encrypted messaging with each other. And like, you know, there are technologies that I guess it's going to take a lot of building because up until I would say about 5 or 6 years ago, even the Silicon Valley ecosystem was fairly free. Like there was very little moderation or censorship in the Silicon Valley ecosystem up until I would say 2015, 2016. And so it's kind of like a new problem that a lot of people are dealing with and grappling with right now, right? So.
Absolutely. How do we,
just look at Luke.
How do we navigate this? How do we navigate this landscape? Do we all trust some other corporation out there? Do we trust some other, or do we just go encrypted, go anonymous? Like it's such a crazy battle that we're even having to deal with a situation where scientists and members of Congress are having their voices censored in favor of multinational corporations with a criminal past.
They use this term misinformation, which is like basically what they're trying to say is the other person is wrong. Mm. And like you shouldn't be allowed to speak if you're wrong. And I'm just like, how can you have any conversation? People are always disagreeing with each other. Someone's usually wrong about the facts. That's the nature of human dialogue with each other.
They might as well say Pravda, right? That would have been more convincing for me.
Well, let's bring up this story we got from TimCast.com. YouTube and Twitter delete Joe Rogan's interview with vaccine inventor Dr. Malone. The interview regarding COVID vaccines and mandates was removed days after Robert Malone's Twitter was also suspended. I don't think it was posted by Joe Rogan, though. Do you guys know who uploaded this? It was Malone himself, right?
Well, when Peter McCullough was on, he uploaded the full interview on his YouTube channel, and YouTube took that video down. So I don't know if Robert Malone uploaded it on YouTube channel.
I think Malone had already been kicked off of Twitter by the time he went on Rogan.
Twitter, but as far as the YouTube video, was uploaded in full, and then it was taken down.
Let me tell you, check this out. So when this episode of the Joe Rogan Experience dropped with Dr. Malone, naturally it was getting huge buzz. Everybody was talking about it. They just banned this guy. And so I opened Spotify. Normally when I open Spotify, it's like the Joe Rogan Experience front and center trying to advertise it. There was nothing. So I scroll around and I'm like, all right, I'll hit podcasts. I hit podcasts, nothing. Hmm. And then I'm like, where's Joe Rogan? I couldn't find him. At first I was just trying to search through like, okay, podcast, okay, comedy, nothing, entertainment, nothing, news. What? Every time I used to open that before, it was like front and center, watch Joe Rogan. So then I just had to manually search Joe Rogan Experience, found it, went into his show profile, found it and played it. That may be nothing. Maybe the Spotify algorithm was like, Tim, we don't think you actually want to listen to Joe Rogan, even though it's like the only thing you listen to on Spotify. So we're not going to suggest it to you right now. But then I started seeing videos pop up. Someone posted a video where they were trying, they were playing a bunch of podcasts on Spotify. They even played Timcast IRL. And then when they opened up Joe Rogan with Malone, it wouldn't load.
Hmm.
And he was like, I can't get it to play. I don't understand. So I don't know if there is, you know, some, you know, something going on. Maybe not, but I just got to, every time there's an accident or a mistake, it's, or coincidence, whatever. Coincidence.
So weird.
It's only ever affecting this kind of thing. When people get banned, oh, it was a mistake. We didn't mean to ban you. Oh, yeah, but how often is our left establishment people getting banned?
Yeah, when that happens, I just scream, Illuminati! it's also important not to jump to conclusions, it's also, there's so many coincidences that always work in the favor of very powerful people. How do you draw the line here? I mean, there also was a lot of internal fighting between some Spotify staff members and Joe Rogan. Is there a deliberate effort to undermine him? Maybe. We don't know, but the fact is, like, these interviews, the Peter McCullough, millions of people have been downloading it. I think last week it was 40 million people downloaded the Peter McCullough interview. Which
how do you know?
Those are some of the numbers that
released,
come up.
I think they released the stats on the Malone. It was 40 million.
On the Malone one? Or the
last week. This was Peter McCullough.
Oh, McCullough.
This is the number that I saw shared around by a lot of individuals. 40 million for Peter McCullough last week. Those videos are still up. They're still gaining a lot of views. Robert Malone, I don't know the exact numbers. Mm-hmm. And again, we're talking about, it's not unlikely. It's very likely, especially with all the news and buzz.
Look, we've seen all of these stories about Spotify going after, like, Spotify employees demanding Joe Rogan be, like, banned or removed, and they won't do it. So is it absurd then to think that these employees have just, you know, put their thumb on the scale a little bit? I'll put it this way. Does there need to be a concerted effort to go after Joe's content through infrastructure on Spotify? No, there doesn't. There just needs to be like a dude. He's sitting in his office and they're like, hey, we need you to, you know, update that form, you know, internally to make sure, you know, the Joe Rogan show is going to publish on time. He goes, oh, okay, I'll get to it. And then he laughs, pulls out his phone and starts playing, you know, angry.
Well, did you guys see today that it was announced that Random House will not be publishing a collection of Norman Mailer because one of their junior employees complained about one of his essays that they thought was racially insensitive. Of course, this guy was writing in the 60s, a gonzo journalist writing all kinds of things. And he was mostly a left-wing guy. But that's kind of what it takes in a lot of these situations now, is that you have these large firms, they have employee revolts, and it could be a very small employee revolt, and they have to do something to appease them, right? In this case, they canceled the entire book, one of the most famous kind of 60s gonzo journalists. And I think they actually informed his family, like his surviving family, they wouldn't be publishing the book. One of the largest publishers, but this is happening all over the place. I mean, Netflix had an internal revolt over Dave Chappelle. Now, we learned at the end of the day, it was just a tiny number of employees, right? It was a few dozen who walked out. It was a massive company. And yet the company had to go through, like, you know, crisis mode internally. From what I understand, it was quite intense within that environment, because I think that, unfortunately, in a lot of these environments, they are not, they've inverted the leadership. It's kind of ruled by the angry or fearful minority, right? It's not the CEO tells the junior staffer, hey, we're a company about, you know, putting out these products that people want to watch and want to see. And you don't have a veto over them, but they won't tell them that.
I feel like with YouTube and Twitter, Facebook, et cetera, they got the opposite message from Uncle Ben dying. You know, you guys know Uncle Ben, he said, you know, he's like, with great power comes great responsibility. Mm. And Peter's like, I'll be here from now on. So, you know, Facebook was like, we have all of this power, but we'll be damned if we want to take responsibility for anything. That's Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. It's all of Silicon Valley. What they don't, first of all, there's a political agenda for sure. And those elements exist, but there's also cowardice in these companies. And when it comes to a lot of the COVID policy, I think for the most part, it is fear of liability. And there's no liability when you're like, hey, man, look, it's just what Fauci said. Oh, the World Health Organization. So if you get someone like Dr. Malone, who's like, for the most part, a lone voice, and he's saying things, they're like, someone's going to sue us. And that's, you can look at a lot of their policies, fear of liability. So what they're basically saying is, if we just ban everybody who dissents from, like, the official narrative, you can't hold us responsible, but they are the public space. These debates need to happen. They are banning dissenting scientific voices. And I'll show you this. We have this from The Atlantic, a smear piece on Dr. Malone, but it does say, it effectively says, that Dr. Malone invented mRNA technology. They say his two studies from, was it 1989, demonstrating how RNA could be delivered into cells using lipids, which are basically tiny globules of fat, which could be used as a vaccine or a vaccine delivery method. These studies indeed represent seminal work in the field of gene transfer, according to Ryan Verbeek, a postdoctoral fellow at Ghent University in Belgium and the lead author of a 2019 history of mRNA vaccine development. Indeed, Malone's studies are the first two references in Verbeek's paper out of 224 in total. So whether or not you want to say he invented mRNA, I'll put it this way. If like the first ever inception of mRNA technology comes from this one dude or his team, then yeah, isn't that inventing something? It doesn't mean he invented the core products. It doesn't mean he made, like, you know, Thomas Edison invented the light bulb, they say. Did he invent the fluorescent light bulb? No. But you still say he invented the light bulb, right? They're trying to make it seem like he's got no grounds to communicate. They're lying. They're claiming he's not an expert. There are these government, you know, funded scientists saying things like, he just played a minor role and has nothing to do. Is he a PhD? Is he a doctor who specializes in vaccines? Has he worked with the government in this regard? Okay, then why are we not allowed to hear what he has to say?
Absolutely. And I don't think big tech is worried about lawsuits, because what are you going to sue people for? This scientist provided some scientific data. Get him. Sue him. They can't do that. And if anything, the information being provided here adds context and information and allows people to have informed consent. One of the things that Dr. Robert Malone brought up that I thought was very instrumental here, he didn't only talk about the profit incentives of Pfizer here. He also talked about bigger institutions, financial institutions like BlackRock. He talked about the big financial systems that have a lot of egregious power that, along with big tech, are working in unison to stifle out any kind of questioning of their product that they're trying to get you to take. That is a scary situation, because you're giving people godlike power and authority when you're able to censor information from the general public. That is scary. That is terrifying. And if everyone should know about this, and I think this is why we're seeing such a huge scramble of people be like, hey, this is absolutely terrifying. I need to move over, get away to a totally different platform where I could actually listen to another side of the story here, which is absolutely critically important.
I feel like Joe Rogan's viewership is more now than when it was when he was on YouTube.
Huh. Yeah. I was wondering, you know, in question the larger move from YouTube to Spotify. And I think if he's able to have a better, closer relationship with Spotify, which it looks like he has, he's able to get away with a lot more. Because if he was still on YouTube, YouTube would have taken the videos down. YouTube is already taking the videos down. So this is one of the ways that he still was able to position himself in a way where these videos are getting tens of millions of downloads and views, but they can't be taken down by YouTube.
This is, I think, one of the points of leverage that Rogan would have over Spotify. Is that Spotify is a much smaller company than Google, right? Much smaller company than what Alphabet or YouTube can provide. Meaning that he's a much bigger asset to Spotify, right? I mean, they paid $100 million to bring him over, I think, was the deal.
That was what I think Wall Street Journal reported. And but so, you never know, because it could be like over 10 years,
sure,
you know what I mean?
Sure.
I doubt it's that long.
But the idea is that he's going to be a lot of revenue for them as well, right?
Absolutely.
Meaning that, you know, whatever pressures they have within the company, whatever pressures they get externally from news media, whatever pressures they get externally from government, if he's making them money and they have their own infrastructure, he has a point of leverage over them. And I think that point of leverage is greater than what he would have had over YouTube, given this to the relative sizes of the companies.
I saw this story about a guy whose muscles are turning to bone. You ever hear about that stuff?
Mm-mm.
That disorder?
Huh.
You've heard about that, Leo?
No, I haven't.
Where it's like, so normally when you exercise, your muscles, the proteins will break down, and then your body replaces it with, you know, proteins, and it grows stronger or whatever. I can't tell you exactly how it works. But apparently, there are some people that when the muscle breaks, it's replaced with calcium and just starts turning to bone. That's kind of how I feel things are going right now. Over time, when somebody like ages out or retires or moves on from a position, it gets replaced by an ideologue, an immovable object that creates rigidity and structural damage. That's why we're at the point now where you've got like Spotify, big company. Probably has a lot of money to lose, a lot of money to make, but you get a small portion of individuals who appear when a certain position opens up or when a certain position, you know, someone moves on from it. the woke millennial types or whatever Gen Z types come in, and then just that one person, it's like bone in your muscle. All of a sudden, you're struggling to move. You can't function properly, and the system just starts collapsing and failing. I saw that story, and I was like, it kind of feels like what's happening to our society, you know? At a certain point, they may just put a feeding tube in the mouth of our culture, and that the government will just start subsidizing and funding things out of fear of collapse and economic failure, and then we're doomed.
And then they'll give them a whole bunch of fentanyl, but that's my own personal perspective. But you made a very good point, because YouTube could afford to lose Rogan. Spotify can't. They invested into him. And I'll be honest, when Rogan first moved onto Spotify, I was like, there's no way I'm downloading another app. I'm not doing this. I'll look at the small clips that he releases. But with the debates, with the people that Rogan had on, Robert Kennedy Jr., Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Robert Malone, having these important conversations, I can't miss it. I had to download the app. I had to sign up for an account, and I had to listen to it because it was the only way I could. And it's not just me. It's a lot of disenfranchised people who are asking some serious questions that the government can't answer right now, as the government has been caught time and time again lying, putting their foot in their mouth, and absolutely not telling the people the truth. It's very evident right now, especially with cases surging, that all of their plans, everything they did, hasn't worked at all. So people are left with some serious questions. Rogan is helping those questions be answered by presenting so much data and information and letting them decide what actions and moves to make for themselves with informed consent, like they should have had from the very beginning.
Let's talk about how stupid all that cultural stuff is again. We got this story from CNN.com. Patton Oswalt defends his longtime friendship with Dave Chappelle. No, he didn't. He apologized. Patton Oswalt was doing a show. Dave Chappelle was doing a bigger show. After Patton Oswalt's show ended, Dave was like, yo, come in, do a set. We got a big arena. And so Patton Oswalt did. And you know what he was probably thinking? Patton Oswalt he's famous, but is he Dave Chappelle? No.
Nope.
So imagine you're like, you're in a band and people have heard of you and you maybe make six figures. It's all right. You're an opening act. And then all of a sudden, like Metallica at an arena is like, why don't you come in and do a set? You're going to be like, dude, an arena. And you're going to go super excited. But oh, no, people are mad at you now. So Patton Oswalt posts this photo where he's like, look at me. I'm with my friend Dave. I've known him for so long. I'm so happy to be here. And he got attacked for it. People started saying that, he was hurting the LGBTQ community and things like that, that he doesn't understand the damage and the pain. So he takes this other photo on Instagram where he's like, he's got like a yellow notepad and he's writing down something, looking pensive in front of the mirror. And he's just like, if I had known the hurt that I would have caused. And he's like, to think I would tell other people they need to learn. Oh, you know what? Grow a spine, dude. You took a picture with your friend. That's it. Dave Chappelle's a funny guy. Grow up.
It's like he was punished and told by a teacher, write an essay why you're sorry for having a friend for decades. I mean, are you kidding me? There was also a lot of fake news spreading around this. There was a caption that Dave Chappelle stopped to help this elderly lesbian after her Suburban broke down. That was fake news. Didn't happen. Just a meme out there. But it tells you what kind of times we're living in, where a person who was friends with someone for decades is apologizing for taking a photo with them. Well, That's crazy.
You know what's funny is people started going back into Patton Oswalt's old stand-up routines.
Oof.
And they found that Patton had made very, like, I would say it goes beyond just being transgressive. It was almost like mean-spirited jokes about transgender people, like far worse than anything that Chappelle had ever done. This was just a few years ago. It was probably from 2014 or something. And people started posting that on Twitter, like, oh, Patton, no, you're so embarrassed of, you know, Dave Chappelle and you were doing this. But I think that's part of the rhetorical move you have to make when you're in these circles, and that a few years ago, if you wanted to be like a bully, you would be making like anti-transgender jokes, or you're making anti-gay jokes, or blah, blah, blah. Now, if you want to be a bully, you got to be woke, right? You got to be woke about it. You can still be like really hateful and like spiteful towards people, and you can still basically be that bully, but you're going to have to do it in a different direction. I think that's what Patton Oswalt, he's orienting himself to where he feels like his Hollywood milieu is now, which is that, you know, Dave Chappelle is one of the most popular entertainers in America, but he may not be that popular among a certain subset of cultural liberals in Hollywood, right? The one segment of people in the news media and the entertainment who actually did take a great deal of offense towards his comedy routines, which I think, honestly, if you polled most transgender people in America, I think most of them probably wouldn't even have been offended because
most of them
were in good taste. Mm-hmm. And if you look at his routines, he makes fun of everybody. And most of those people don't get offended at it because they understand the purpose and role of comedy and levity in society, right?
Yeah, well, that all seems to be going away, I guess, except for the fact, you know, Netflix keeps signing more and more deals with Dave Chappelle. So let me just say this. Dave Chappelle is being signed to Netflix because Netflix has the data. Netflix looks at who's watching Dave Chappelle, and they're like, wow, everybody loves this guy. Let's give him more money. You see, Netflix doesn't make money off of advertisements. They make money off of memberships. If they book Dave Chappelle to do a headline, you know, major special on Netflix, and they give him, how much are they paying him? It's like tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah, it's a lot.
An employee leaked the information to the general public.
Yeah, wasn't it like $25 million or something?
It was a lot, yeah.
Man, could you know what? Look, I know Dave's the best of the best. And it takes a lot of work to do these specials, but that much money for that much work, it's just like, wow, when you're good, right? But Netflix is thinking, we are going to gain more paying subscribers by booking this guy than we will lose over any outrage. We've known this. The leftist outrage, the faux complaints, it's like 30 people on Twitter who won't stop talking, and they convince people, like Patton Oswalt, he gets convinced, oh, everyone's mad at me because he got like 30 people constantly spamming him over and over and over again. Reminds me of that Family Guy joke where the guy's like, we got 7 phone calls last night,
That's
which
right.
means 70 billion people are yeah. upset. That's what it is. So Dave Chappelle's going to keep getting booked. We're going to keep laughing. But you guys, I don't know if you guys saw his last special. They're getting to him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He was defensive. He spends a lot of, I would say the past few specials, he spends a portion of the time sort of defending himself against claims being made against him, right? Which is not really where you want to be as a comedian.
Nope.
You want to focus on the jokes, on the entertainment. It does sound like, you know, if I was him, I'd avoid some of those jokes in the next special, focus on some different topics, or just take some time off. But, you know, he's in that space now. And I think it is, again, that small minority of persistent, angry people can do this to you if you're in certain social spaces, even if the vast majority of America, I think, understands that Dave Chappelle's always been a little bit risque. He's always been a little bit edgy. But he's there to make you laugh. He doesn't actually hate anybody. He doesn't try to make anyone hate anybody. But that's where a lot of these spaces are now. And that's why someone like Patton Oswalt feels like he has to apologize for a friendship with probably one of the most popular entertainers in the entire country.
But they made Dave Chappelle get serious, and that's what really kind of affected everything. And you bring up a small amount of people. We have to understand that these small amount of people have a lot of institutional power, especially when it comes to the corporate media, literally promoting a Netflix protest, speaking about it. But when you talk about something and say, there's going to be a big protest here, there's going to be a protest here, you're bringing attention to it.
Just to clarify, though, when we're talking about a small amount of people, we're talking about, you know, John, you know, at John96321 on Twitter. It's these random profiles where they have no followers. They're not necessarily bots. I don't think they're bots. They could be sock puppets. But someone like Patton Oswalt, you look at his tweet about this, and he's just inundated with, like, you can really only see maybe like 30 to 50 tweets or whatever, like, unless you really want to scroll through everything. And they're like, do better. I can't believe you would do this. Dave's hurting us. And you're like, that's probably 30 to 50 people. Out of the millions of people who follow Patton Oswalt, how many are logging onto Twitter, clicking his post, and then complaining 0.001%, 0.0001%? But these people see these things and they assume that, wow, everybody's mad. I better talk about something, making it worse. Dave Chappelle gets dragged into it. He got serious.
And there was a CNN article generated about this,
right?
There was actually a CBC journalist, a Canadian Broadcast Corporation journalist, who just resigned from her post. And she just wrote a Substack piece about why. And one of the complaints that she had was that, you know, you guys kept running these articles about how people find Dave Chappelle offensive. Why didn't we ever go to the vast majority of people who just like him and ask them what they think, right? Like, the media may be a small number of people, but it is a powerful institution. And they're going to be writing articles about you. You know that someone's going to be taking issue with it. Even if it's a few dozen people at Netflix, it's going to be portrayed as a massive staff revolt. You know, that is a headache in and of itself.
Yep. Imagine the narrative being that Netflix knows their audience doesn't like Dave Chappelle, that people are greatly offended and don't watch it, and they booked him anyway. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. No, they're booking him because he's bringing in members. He's bringing in money. Now, for me, I don't have a Netflix account ever since they did that thing with the cuties.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa.
Nope.
Did they like double down on it?
Sure did.
It's bad enough. Yeah. Netflix has that show about, I don't even want to talk about this show.
Yeah.
A bunch of mainstream celebrities talking about kids in adult situations, and that is putting it very lightly. I'm surprised they have that show in the first place. I don't know anybody who watches it, to be completely honest. And like, for the most part, you know, we're not like a staunch conservative suit-wearing TPUSA kind of place around here. You know, we have like skaters, skateboarders, rollerbladers, punk rock, music.
Contrarians.
Relative contrarians to a certain degree. And people aren't just being like, oh, turn on, you know, Big Mouth on Netflix. That's a show I like. People are like, that's nasty. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what they were thinking with that show. It's just whatever. But hey, look, I'm not interested in watching a show like that or watching Cuties. And if they want to keep doubling down on that stuff, I'm not going to be interested in being a member or subscribing to that, to a platform like that. You know what I mean?
And I think that raises a lot more controversy, especially with the Cuties. A lot of people not signing up then compared to Dave Chappelle. That's only from my perspective. I could be wrong. But again, they continue to work with Dave Chappelle. That's a big sign that obviously the general public, a large, vast amount of people like his comedy. They want to hear edgy stuff. They want to hear stuff that lightens the situation. And when you're able to joke about issues that the establishment doesn't want you to talk about, if you're able to joke around serious issues, you're able to, of course, make people relate to them better. You're able to, of course, get rid of a lot of the stigma, a lot of the hate, a lot of the negative energy around it. I would say comedians are absolutely crucial towards bettering society, bettering our discourse. And this is an effort to, as we were talking about earlier, destroy that conversation and to create more echo chambers.
I feel like almost the way that comedy is getting around this a little bit is a lot of these networks are bringing in either foreign or I think maybe more cultural, you know, niche cultural subjects and actors and producers to produce a lot of the same stuff. Like, if you watch some of the foreign programming on Netflix, I think you'll find much kind of racier jokes or much, edgier, more risque material than I think what you might see in a Dave Chappelle stand up. And I think part of that is that you kind of get an out, right? Like, if it's foreign produced, if it happens to be international comedy or international cultures, maybe these same subcultures of Americans in these companies and institutions and media give it a little bit more of a pass, right? Which is kind of funny. Like if you have to watch like a Korean drama to be able to like see funny comedy about topics that people want to be transgressive about, but it almost feels like you have to do that sometimes.
There's a video on YouTube.
Oh yeah,
that we bring up every so often. It is from August 9th, 2010. It is from The Onion. And it is titled "Overcome Stress by Visualizing It as a Greedy Hook-Nosed Race of Creatures."
Oh my.
It's The Onion, and I can't even tell you what the jokes are about because
you can't play this.
I'm wondering if we can because it's on YouTube itself. Gosh. But it's a woman, and she's like, when you have money troubles, visualize a greedy hook-nosed race of creatures. And it's very obviously like a demeaning picture, like a very disgusting picture of a stereo. Like I don't even want to get into it. The point is, I think people understand the joke The Onion's making here.
Yes. Terrible.
And this has got 1.5 million views. YouTube still has it up. This is what comedy was just 10 years ago for these networks. Well, now comedy's turned into like what South Park did the joke with Jimmy. He's like, hey, what's the deal with Mexican food? It's excellent cuisine and I love it. Like, it's not even
a
joke.
Comedy,
it's
just, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, actually, it is kind of funny when you're making fun of it.
Well, one show I really like is called Rami, and I don't know if you guys have seen Rami. Mm-hmm. But basically, it's about it stars an Egyptian-American who's also the writer and showrunner. And, you know, he lives in New Jersey, and he has an Egyptian-American family. He's trying to grow up in the States with kind of these cultural clashes and, like, he has an uncle who's, like, very anti-Semitic and, like, constantly making Jew jokes. But he still loves him, even though he kind of tells him that's, like, not right to do that. But, like, yeah, that's the cultural context you have to go to discuss something like that. Because, like, it's not openly, like, if the character was, like, white, American, or, like, Christian or something, like, they wouldn't be allowed to have an uncle who does that and, like, talk about it and, like, actually normalize it and let people, like, talk around their differences. Because you have to actually cast a character like that and have a showrunner like that to be actually able to broach these issues now. Because there's so much sensitivity in talking about cultural differences, right? If you watch some of those older shows like Good Times or The Jeffersons, from the 60s and 70s, they openly talked about like racial stereotypes of like whites and blacks between each other. That's how they broke down a lot of the difference. Now it's just like, you just have to say the party line. Like you break these things down by just beating things into people's heads rather than actually letting them be open about their prejudices and talking them through, right?
I mean, you look at, Patton Oswalt as a person. And then you look at Dave Chappelle as a person, and I'm just like, I kind of know who I'd rather watch if I was given an opportunity. The, you know, the whiny crybaby who's like, I'm so sorry for all the pain, or Dave Chappelle who doubles down. Granted, he got a little bit defensive on his last special for sure, but absolutely was like, I don't care. You know what I mean? I'm going to say what I want. And I'm like, yeah, that's more appealing to me. It's more honest.
Well, that's why they're trying to get rid of him. Anyone speaking truth is deemed as a heretic in this new kind of cult of woke, and he's the one willing to speak the larger truths that a lot of people are thinking but too afraid to say. And we're pretty far away from the days of George Carlin, Richard Pryor, and Bill Hicks, but man, did those individuals make comedy great, make the First Amendment something that a lot of people stood behind, and these larger ideas that they represented, that they were able, the effect that they were able to have on people was so important, and I don't think enough people attribute them to the larger successes that we have as a country, as a nation, as a culture, because of these individuals that stood on their principles, and in some instances were even arrested for it. So shouts out to those individuals. If you haven't heard of them, if you're someone who never heard of these names, look them up, look up their old videos, and be prepared to be astonished at the larger truth bombs that they were dropping on people that absolutely have awakened humanity.
You have a list of names?
I just listed three of them. I could probably think of some more. What are your favorite comedians? I mean, Eddie Murphy, too. Eddie Murphy was also able to go to places that a lot of people saw as extremely controversial.
Right.
He doubled down, tripled down on it, especially when it came to Bill Cosby. Eddie Murphy called out Bill Cosby way before anybody else in a very, very important way. Who's your guys' favorite? Linda?
My favorite comedians are not really all that transgressive. I've never really got into George Carlin. But I feel like every comedian has some form of history of offensive jokes that they now are walking back. And I've always felt that a lot of these comedians have made a point of pulling up the ladder behind them, which I really hate to see. I would like to see some of them with some form of character, which is why I really liked Dave Chappelle. And I do hope this is not getting to him. But
or all these comedians can just be like, shut up. I don't care. I'm going to make jokes.
Yep.
Well,
in the 1990s,
Congress brought a series of people to testify and grill them. Some of them were the heads of labels for musicians and artists, recording artists. Others were heads of like video game firms like Sega of America and so on and so forth. And universally, what they would say is like, this is our freedom of expression. We don't think that this is going to promote real world violence or real world misogyny, real world, et cetera, et cetera. You know, this is a place that people go to escape, so on and so forth. Now, those very same firms, when they're grilled by Congress, when they're grilled by the media, typically they concede something, right? Typically they back down or they try to appease the opposition. I think the culture of their response has changed a lot in the face of a lot of these protests. And I'm not sure what the difference is between now and the 1990s, but you'll see, you know, Tipper Gore, Bob Dole, Joe Lieberman, Bill Clinton, these people all going after these companies, and the company's just responding that it's our right to be able to speak freely, and you know, it's entertainment. It's not real life, right?
Yeah. People in the comment section are bringing up Andrew Dice Clay, Lenny Bruce, Norm McDonald, and
Norm.
Of course, Bob Saget. And Bob Saget, right there. I mean, if there's something that's going to raise a couple hairs on your head, it's definitely the comedy of Bob Saget. So there's been a number of individuals, and I think the reason why we go to comedians is because they're able to talk about these issues that so many people are afraid to talk about. And there's not only a layer of kind of controversy. People are also talking about Patrice O'Neill. He was also really just an amazing comedian. Mel Brooks as well. But they're able to, you know, hash things out through a way that is bringing people together instead of dividing them. And if you want to push the divide and conquer agenda effectively, you have to get rid of comedy. You have to get rid of satire because it's one of the most effective weapons against the establishment, against the ruling elite, against the very powerful. Because if you mock them, you take away all of their power and all of their influence. And we need more mockery than ever.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is 2022.
Yes.
Welcome to the first show of the year on Timcast IRL. And this is an election year. It is a main election year. 2020 was the biggest election year. 2019 was the primary season. 2018 was the midterms. 2021 is when everyone is just zoned out. They are beaten down and tired. 2022, the House, the Senate, they're at stake. And there are predictions from many pollsters many analysts, of a red tsunami. Now, it's not just that people are sick and tired of Democrats, that independent voters are favoring Republicans in the double digits. It's that gerrymandering also just happened. Redistricting happened. And now there's an expectation that all of these Republican-controlled states, because people were voting in their local elections, have set it up so that Republicans are more likely to win. Combined with the fact that we have a massive number of Democrats retiring. Fox News reports surge in House Democratic 2022 retirement announcements as 2021 comes to a close. They say a trio of Democrats in the House, Reps Stephanie Murphy of Florida, Lucille Roybal-Allard of California, and Albie O'Sires of New Jersey last week said they'll retire at the end of next year rather than run in the 2022 midterm elections for another term in Congress. The latest news brought to 23 the number of House Democrats who are retiring or bidding for another office. We just got news that I think, who was it, Bobby Rush?
What's the name?
Is also not going to be seeking re-election. There's actually an announcement from a bunch of Democrats who had lost in 2018 who were going to try and run again, also now announcing they're not even going to bother trying to run, even though they aren't in office. Something is happening. I think the Democrats see the writing on the wall. Nobody wants to be that losing candidate. So they're like, what's the point? If you can't win, do something else. A bunch of these Democrats are running for other offices, you know, in the state, governorships or whatever. Many are just bowing out. I don't know, man. Red wave? What do you think?
It seems like if the election were held, you know, next week, that would be the case, right? The question, I think, is can the Democrats instill some confidence on issues like what's happening with the economy, what's happening with COVID? I think Biden's mandate was basically normalcy, right? Can he create a normal political, social, and economic environment? And I think part of that is like getting past the pandemic. Part of that is getting past COVID-19. And I think there's people within his political party that really don't want to do that. They're not ready for that. I think they've inculcated a certain mindset among a lot of the Democrats on COVID-19 that it's just very hard to overcome, even though there are signs that I think the Biden administration is pushing in that direction.
I don't think they're going to be able. Look, I hate to say I know what's going to happen. I don't. Based on everything we've seen with the polls, I think it's fairly likely the Democrats, they know what's happening. The writing's on the wall. But I want to show you, you mentioned Joe Biden. I want to show you this meme that's been going around. I did not make this.
Yep.
It says 2020, Biden-Harris. Every single COVID death is someone Donald Trump murdered. 2021, Joe Biden eating an ice cream cone. There's nothing I can do, Jack. That's where we're at. Joe Biden, the Democrat, look, I think the Democrats, voters, they voted for Biden because they hate Trump. Without Trump, they have no identity. That was their whole rally. That was their whole rallying cry was orange man bad. And now there's nothing. Going into the midterms, you've got parents who are livid. You've got an economy in shambles. You've got Joe Biden saying there's nothing we can do at the federal level. Well, I'll tell you this. You vote in the primaries and get rid of all of the establishment Republicans, bring in some populists who believe in America. They'll bring your jobs back. They'll secure your borders. They'll make sure the country's economy is getting back on track. I don't necessarily have anything to say about an individual candidate. But I'll tell you, the Democrats ain't going to do it. They have become the party of big business, massive corporate wealth. You take a look at people like Hassan Piker, who is one of the most prominent voices among progressives, and he supports the government mandating you be administered a private product from a massive multinational, unaccountable corporation with no liability protections. And I don't care what the dude says he claims about, you know, I don't care what his claims are about supporting universal healthcare and nationalization of big pharma. It's like, dude, you're sitting here right now telling us that you want the government to be able to mandate a private product to be administered to people if they want to engage in public accommodations, if they want to be able to use these things. I'm sorry, this is what the modern left is. This is, you know, he's one of the if not the biggest political commentator on the left, and that's what young leftists follow, support for that kind of system. Not always, not everybody who watches likes him. I get that, but that to me is insane. I can sit here all day and say that a lot of Trump supporters are in a cult and you know, worship the ground Trump walks on. I can say that Donald Trump he represents the worst of American culture, in my opinion. I can say he had a lot of really good policies, and as much as a lot of people didn't like him for who he was actually bringing factories back. He was trying to secure America's borders and bolster our economy. So people, whether they liked him or not, they voted for him. There are certainly a lot of people who love him. We're not getting that from the establishment. The Democrats are offering us nothing other than Trump is bad. And people, they're like, I don't know anything about that at the point. Trump's not the president. The economy is in shambles. My life is not going well. I'm tired of the lockdowns. They just brought back mask mandates down the street because we're on the border of the county. And it makes literally no sense. And I'm like, these people need to be stripped of all power. They are completely insane. And that is the Democratic Party and the Republican establishment.
So one of the things I noticed, one of the things I think the Democrats really should have done, and then I have a question for you, is they should have run on getting rid of Trump, because that's a pretty strong platform. And then the first thing they should have done is turned and said, we have to have issues that we're fighting for, not just stuff that we're fighting against, because it's not a winning strategy in the long term. They had to have known this. I just don't think they were thinking anywhere near far enough past stage one. And then for you, in your meme here, you use the term mass formation psychosis. And I haven't really been able to get into this, but I keep seeing it. Can you, like, unpack that for us?
Well, I just use that phrase in reference to it's a cult. It's a cult that's formed.
Oh, okay.
I've long said that they're a chaotic and destructive force, the left. I don't like the idea of I've actually been critical of those. It's critical race theory over and over again, because what's happening on the left isn't just critical race theory. That's right. Why I like to say wokeness or something. Right. It is all of these things are just an amalgam of contrarian. I hate the other. That's our identity. There, you know, it's really funny. You look at Reddit, you look at the comments, and they'll say all the Trump cult, they just hate the other side. And it's like, who are you listening to? Who are you watching? Because if you watch, like, I don't know, Steven Crowder, one of the most prominent independent conservative voices, he's actually making arguments.
Right.
He doesn't just hate you. In fact, he tries to debate you, to bring you on and convince you
of
these things.
Mind.
Who are they actually listening to? Oh, CNN, Brian Stelter, Jake Tapper, Cuomo. Well, he's gone. Things like that. Mass formation psychosis, in my view, I'm just referencing all of these people. Their world was getting crazy. Social media was crazy. They latched on to this narrative that Trump was the cause of all of it. And you were mentioning something earlier that Michael Malice said. They thought Donald Trump was the river when he was actually the dam.
Yeah, I messaged you. I said that one of the most insightful things that I think I've ever heard a modern political commentator say is something Michael Malice said, and that was they thought that Trump was the river. Wait, what was it that he said?
They thought Trump was the river, but he was actually the dam.
Yes. So that means that he was kind of holding back this huge wave of populism. He was really just the tip of the iceberg, which is something that they weren't counting on. And now I think they're seeing the other side of that.
When Donald Trump goes on stage with Bill O'Reilly and he gets booed by his audience, it's not a cult.
Right.
It is angry people. They are America First individuals. They are fed up with all of this. I think the Democrats know all of this. All right. All right. Hot shots. Pop quiz. Name a Democrat who could win a presidential election, who's relative, like right now. Name somebody.
I've been thinking about that. Oprah.
Yeah, Oprah.
Michelle Obama.
Yeah, Michelle Obama.
Michelle Obama, like, Oprah.
Actively right now in politics.
Right now in politics.
Who's a prominent? Oh, sure.
Trump was never in politics either, right?
Trump was planning on running. He
ran a number of times. He lost before. Yeah.
So I'll be the first to say, I've stated before, I think Michelle Obama could win. I don't think she can win at this point. I do not think so.
Really?
But obviously Michelle Obama. Because if you take a celebrity and, you know, put them in a position, they might get the votes. But like, I mean, who among Democrats right now?
I mean,
Oprah's a TV show host.
They don't have a bench, right?
Right.
They have not developed because their leadership is so old.
Mm-hmm.
They have a young generation, but those young generation are way too young, right? Like, people in their early 30s are not going to be running for president, right? So they don't have that middle layer of people of kind of like statesmen and stateswomen who could just jump into the presidential spot. And, you know, typically in this scenario, you'd line up the vice president, but nobody likes the vice president.
Yep.
She's even more unpopular than Joe Biden is, right?
And actually, I think that flipped recently.
Oh, did it? Okay.
Yeah, well, yeah. I think his approval dropped below hers. It's
oh
so
my
bad.
Gosh.
And that's really
that's
bad.
That's even worse. Oh, my gosh.
Yep. So I think come in 2022, the Democrats have awakened to the reality. Without Trump, they have nothing.
Well, look,
And the right doesn't need Trump.
I live in Virginia. I did some reporting on the election. And at one point, I got a mailer from the Democratic Party of Virginia about Glenn Youngkin, the Republican candidate. And it was full of Trump quotes about Glenn Youngkin. It was just talking about how Trump has endorsed Youngkin, how much he likes Youngkin. Didn't say anything about the Democratic candidate. Didn't really say anything about Youngkin himself. Just talked about Trump. McAuliffe, the Democratic candidate for governor who lost, kept talking about Trump. Every other line out of his mouth was Trump, 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 Trump. That's their motivating factor, right? They, you know, it's the dog running after the car. They caught the car. Trump's gone. Trump is gone. But that's still their campaigns. That's still their focus is Trump. And the problem is that that might work for the hardcore Democratic faithful, but a lot of those people in between, the Hispanics, the Wall Street Journal had a really good article about Hispanics are now like split between the parties. We had Rui Tejera on our podcast on inquiremore.com, who is one of the emerging Democratic majority author whose thesis has been badly misinterpreted. He was saying it's not true that just because, you know, America is going to have many more minorities, the Democrats are automatically going to win because Hispanics care about issues like, you know, basic bread and butter issues, and they care about, they don't want to defund police. They don't want kind of a radical social agenda. You know, these are very middle of the road type voters. And I think these middle of the road type voters, you know, just being against one person for the rest of their life, Donald Trump is not a motivation to vote, right? Getting things basically working in their lives is the motivation to vote. And the Democrats really aren't doing that when there's a permanent COVID emergency that they just can't overcome, right?
And they have to either admit it's what they're doing doesn't work and that they've wasted your time, or that it's over and they lose that emergency, you know, power, that fear factor. I'll tell you what I care about. For one, the economy is trash. Inflation is through the roof and we need to get this country working again. The current policies are a disaster, but I also want to mention the insanity of it all. So this past weekend, I was with my girlfriend. We went to go eat sushi. We walk into this restaurant, which is, I kid you not, the restaurant was probably about as big as two of this studio room. So that's like, you know, 15 by 35. The restaurant was probably like 15 by 50 or something. There was a table about 10 feet away from where we were standing. We walk up the stairs and there's a waiter and he's wearing a mask and he sees us and he goes, "Do you have masks?" And we were like, "No, we don't have any." Like, there's the mask mandate literally came back the day before.
Yeah.
It was at 5 p.m. on December 31st. So we're there on like, you know, New Year's Day or whatever. Like, you know, we're just going to grab some sushi. I'm like, "No, we don't have any." And he's like, "Well, you need to wear them." And then I look around and I see 20 people sitting down and I'm like, nobody's wearing a mask. Like, they're all sitting here and they were like, "Well, they're sitting down." And I was like, "All right, can we just sit down? Like, there's a table literally 10 feet in front of us." And he was like, "Yes, but you have to have a mask." And I was like, "But no one is wearing one." Like, they're all talking, they're all laughing, they're all eating, and they're not wearing masks. But I was like, "Okay, no, I get it. We'll sit down." And he says, "Fine, but if you get up, you have to have a mask." So he hands us masks. I say, "Okay, no problem. I don't care." And then he's grabbing the menus to take the 2 seconds to walk us to our seat. When all of a sudden, behind the counter to my right, I hear someone yell, "Put the mask on!"
Wow.
And then I was like, "We're gonna sit down." They're like, "No, you have to wear it."
What?
And then I was like, "But I can take it off when I sit down." They're like, "Yes." And I went, "Are you serious?" And they all the staff go, "Yes." And I was like, "Dude, I am out of here, man." Like, there is a certain degree to where when all this started, they said mask mandates. I'm like, I get it, man. Masks stop you from spitting on people. They don't stop the aerosolized virus, to my understanding. But spitting on people can also transmit. So that I get. That makes sense to me. But when you're in a restaurant and they're like, "Take this disposable mask you're going to throw away in 30 seconds. We don't actually expect you to wear it while you're here, but you have to pretend to be doing something for some reason." I'm like, "Dude, why are you doing this? This is going beyond insane." And that is something that Frederick County and there's a couple counties in Maryland are doing. New York has vax or mask as a statewide policy now. And I'm like, "Look, if you want to go to a record store, I understand that argument. But if you don't have logic behind your policies, then you are cowards, you are insane, and this doesn't make any sense." So I'll tell you this. If the Democrats are going to keep running on ridiculous, and not to mention polluting policies that are just insane. We're environmentalists. We don't like global warming. But take this piece of trash you're going to throw away and not actually wear. Like, they handed me garbage. They literally handed me garbage to sit down and throw in the trash.
Yep.
That was it, for no other reason.
Yep.
So you know what we did? We got in the car. We drove only a few minutes because it's a border county. And then there we were eating sushi with no mask. Like, what is wrong with these people, man? That's what I'm sick of. I'm sick of the Democrats like AOC. She's in New York and she says, "Kathy Hochul, maybe she could give Ron DeSantis some tips." Oh, is that true? AOC, you flew down to Miami to party with no mask on.
Yeah.
while saying that ending the mask mandate in Texas was going to get people killed. And then you think Ron DeSantis needs tips? Yo, you're going down. You don't believe in your own policies, but the cult members in your state don't read, they don't pay attention, and they vote for people like you. I'm sick of it, man. Vote them all out. But I'll tell you this, if you don't vote in the primaries, you will get a bunch of neocon crackpots who the first thing they do is they go, "Now that we've been elected, we're going to stand by the mandate of the American people and reinvade Afghanistan." And great, that's exactly what the people want.
Tim, just really quickly, you don't get it. The masks work so well the first time. The COVID policies worked so well the first time that we just have to do them again. Okay?
You know what I was thinking? Maybe it's because we only wore 2 masks. Maybe we should wear 4.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Well, I think you brought up a good point, though, in that the Republicans could fall into the same trap now, which is that they could see that the Democratic governance is unpopular. They could see the economic and public health emergency is kind of unpopular. They could ride that wave into power, and then they could just do nothing, right? I mean, that's kind of what they did in 2018 with healthcare, right? They didn't have a healthcare strategy for the Affordable Care Act. They were the dog running after the car. They were saying, repeal Obamacare, repeal Obamacare. Said that for basically 8 years. Once they got in a position to do something about healthcare, they didn't have any ideas. They basically said it's too complicated and they couldn't agree on anything, right? The question is, are they actually going to have a governing agenda, or we're going to end up right back in the same place with parties trading places and not actually being able to resolve some of these things and move forward?
Yeah, I have absolutely no hope in the Republicans. To me, they're going to be absolutely lame ducks. They're going to be sitting on their hands, and they're going to allow a lot of these egregious behaviors to happen, just like they did from the very beginning of this. So to expect them to do something different is absolutely naive. Big tech monopoly lobbying has a hold of a lot of the big conservative base. They're absolutely futile to actually challenge the establishment, and the few ones that do, they're the ones that get hit. They're the ones that get slandered. They're the ones that get
booted from their committees.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, so, the progressives just run amok in Congress.
Huh. So, you know, what's happening right now is also absolutely crazy when we look at the raw numbers, especially with people on Twitter making the case that, you know, there's huge numbers of cases in Florida going up and only concentrating on that and ignoring the fact that there's a lot more cases in New York. And New York, of course, represents the state that did the most. What's the correct answer here? It's a very complicated one. It's not an easy one, but I would end by saying you shouldn't have all of your faith, all of your cookies in that Republican basket, because you're going to be let down.
Or just vote in the primaries and make sure you get rid of the establishment. Well, here's the new narrative. This is what we get. We got this from The Guardian. U.S. could be under right-wing dictator by 2030. Canadian professor warns. Canadian political scientist warns an op-ed of Trumpist threat to American democracy and possible effect on northern neighbor. I love how they're like, right-wing dictatorship is coming, and they show a picture of Trump. I gotta be honest, and I'm not trying to be mean. I'm not entirely convinced Donald Trump will even be alive in 2030.
Who knows?
Eight years from now, he'll be old. In his late 80s, mid to late 80s. Okay. I mean, that's well above average life expectancy for the average American adult male. But maybe, I gotta be honest, Trump is pretty spry. So he could be, but under a right-wing dictator. See, I'll tell you what they're doing. Mm. They're just trying to generate fear, to scare the left, to get them to rally around something. But I tell you, a mannequin will not be Trump. Donald Trump is that big imposing figure the left cowered and feared. And now they're like, but look at this invisible specter of right-wing Trumpism. And it's like, yo, I don't know what that is. I don't see anything there. It's hollow. Your argument is trash.
I mean, they'll have to portray whoever comes next as worse than Trump, right? Because it's like you have a television series and they're like, oh, the next season's nowhere near as exciting. You know, it's going to be boring, actually. Like, no one's going to watch it, right? They're using the same principles as entertainment or infotainment. Which, you know, I think it's not even a choice between whether they really believe this or they don't. I think a really good, propagandist believes what they're saying, right? Like, I think a lot of people on the left have convinced themselves that democracy is, 5 seconds away from, you know, disappearing. That allows them to project that same image to the rest of the planet, I think.
Okay, you're correct. They're going to have to say that whoever comes next is worse than Trump. The problem is, take a look at this article from The Independent. Trump's denial of climate change represents worse threat to humanity than Hitler, says activist Noam Chomsky. Look at this dude, man.
Whoa.
Yikes. Bro. Noam Chomsky has that famous video where it's in the 70s and he's defending free speech, even for those you disagree with. Now he's become this disheveled old crackpot.
Communist.
But here's my main point. If they're now saying in more ways than one that Trump is worse than Hitler, here's an article from Newsweek. A woman tweeted Hitler was better than Trump and Twitter won't say whether she broke its rules. If they actually believe that, then what do they say about the next guy? Antichrist or something?
Did you guys watch this Netflix movie, Don't Look Up?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I liked it.
Well, okay. Yeah, I thought it was a fun movie in terms of it being watchable. And actually, someone I had worked with in the past, David Sirota, helped co-write it. So I'm not trying to be mean about it, but one of the things the movie really gets wrong is that, okay, so the plot of the movie, for those who haven't seen it, is that a comet is heading towards the Earth. It's going to be there in 6 months. And the news media and politicians...
Spoiler alerts.
Ah!
Just in case.
Oh yeah, okay.
It's a still new movie.
All right, I'll do mild spoilers. I won't give anything too much away. But basically, the arc of the plot is that the media and the politicians don't take it seriously. Like, they don't really care that a comet's going to head towards the Earth and destroy everybody. And, you know, I watched that and I just thought to myself, it doesn't have any bearing on reality, because, like, if there was a comet heading towards the Earth, I think CNN would have, like, a comet hologram. You know, I think they would have 25...
Comet watch.
They would have, like, 25 intersectional takes on the comet every day. Like, what the comet is going to do to women and minorities. Like, right. You know, like, like, the media in this country is driven by fear. It's not always fear of stuff you really should be all that scared of, I would say. But, like, they understand that fear sells, that fear gets clicks. And there's absolutely no way that they will... pass up the challenge of an actual world-ending disaster.
Right.
Which, by the way, climate change is bad in many ways, but it's not actually a world-ending disaster. Like, the planet will still exist. The ecosystem will still exist. Humans will still exist. It'll change. A comet would end life on Earth.
That's a really good point. I can imagine Don Lemon doing, you know, Comet Watch. And they have, like, they have the sidebar, and it's, like, miles, you know, time till hits the Earth, and, like, miles traveled.
Mm-hmm.
And then there will be, like, a special presentation where they, like, look at the sky, and they have, like, a reporter on the ground. We're here in New York, the top of the Empire State Building. You can look up. You can start to see it forming. They would never stop. They'd have panels discussing, like...
No. They would have reenactments. They would have animated reenactments of people dying and getting obliterated. They would have a death counter, how many people are going to die, how many people are going to suffer.
Every segment would be yelling at the president. Mr. President, how dare you not blow up that comet? You know, you have to do this immediately. Like, it would be 5 alarm car fire. We know that because that's what happened with COVID-19,
right?
Which was far less severe than a comet striking the Earth. So I just, you know, it's a fun movie. I think it was an enjoyable watch, but I do think that the writers kind of just missed it. Like, that's not the way the media operates.
There's a meme I saw where it's the Wojak face all happy, and it's got the full political compass over the face. Looking at the movie saying, wow, it's proving me right and making fun of my political rivals. Like, the movie made fun of literally everyone. Mm-hmm. That's why I thought it was all right. But it was obvious what the narrative was. The message was that climate change is serious. The scientists are warning us and no one takes it seriously. But I think you're right. I think the fear is too juicy for them to give up.
But there's also a lot of people desensitized, as you were just talking about. A few moments ago, people are angry, people are fed up. I absolutely believe that's the case, especially with COVID, especially with just how horribly the government messed up and how you would argue that every step of the way they made the situation that much worse. There's a lot of evidence to suggest that, but at a certain point, I think enough people say, hey, I'm just sick of this. This is not going to affect me. There's only so many times you could lunge out and scream boo at somebody before they're like, okay, this doesn't really work at all. And I think this is why there is a victory that we're having here that we need to note, and that is that news, corporate news media viewership, by and large, has been going down by the years, and it has continued to go down, and I think that's a huge victory, and I think people are just getting so desensitized, so out of touch with it, or they're just going on Zoloft and other SSRIs, but there's also a small section of that, but the majority of people are saying, this is not scary anymore. It's like a Halloween ride that just, you know, loses its factor after going on it so many times.
It's called, it's a form of bias that, like, probably all the news has, which is called negativity bias, right? Like, they're always trying to tell you how the world's, like, going to hell in a handbasket, right? And at a certain point, why does someone want to sit there and watch that every single day? Even in the most trivial circumstances, you know, finding a woman in Central Park who's rude to somebody or something and putting the video on national news. Like,
right.
At a certain point, someone's going to be like, why am I watching this over and over? Like, why am I getting this distorted view of the world? Why are they trying to make me miserable?
I don't think that's it, because I think you can levy some of that criticism towards us as well. You know, we see things in the news and we highlight, like, wow, we think this is pretty bad and something needs to be addressed.
Mm.
To be fair, though, you know, if you even look at some of the stories we did over, like, to the start of the show, like Joe Rogan leading the charge to go against censorship is fairly neutral. Censorship is bad, but people fighting back is good. So we try not to be always very negative, but I think we're very negative. However, I think cable TV is driven specifically by editorial demand for negativity, which is, it's different from here. Like, we have actual, we're people with opinions. Before we start the show, we sit down. I say, like, hey, Luke, what have you seen in the news? What do you think's important? And Luke's got a bunch of stories, like, riots are happening here or this happens. And then we'll try and figure out what we think is, like, the most important thing that we should talk about. What matters most to people in terms of what's happening? For me, I thought the Joe Rogan thing was big because he's such a big celebrity to push back against censorship. And I don't see that as a negative for the most part. Kind of just is. But CNN, we learned this thanks to real journalists like Project Veritas. when you get that CNN producer saying that COVID deaths were gangbusters for ratings. They put that big old thing, death counter, on the TV. Think about how despicable that is.
Man, and celebrating and being happy about it, that they were able to get ratings because of that fear. That's another layer of it that really needs to be understood by people who consume media. Yeah. They should understand what they're getting and who they're getting it from. I mean, and when they're getting the news from CNN, you don't want to know who you're getting it from. When you find out, holy cow. You
know, I mean, I think news media always has to address problems. Like, you know, I made a couple of documentaries with Fox over the past year in different locations. But I think in terms of addressing the problems, you should also be addressing solutions. Like, you should also be constructive. You should be trying to figure out, like, how do we solve this? Like, what are people doing about it? And I think the difference between people sitting around talking about problems like we are and what CNN does is, like, CNN doesn't care if there ever is a solution to the problem. CNN is just there to tell you that everything's horrible and you need to be addicted to us to keep telling you how horrible
things
are,
right? They're incentivized to make it more horrible because when they do, they get more viewership because of that. Mm-hmm. So, and I think this is in response to a lot of their coverage, which is, in my opinion, leading to some real life harm.
I gotta tell you, man, you're constantly just watching what's going on. You know, people have asked me, like, man, it must get to you sometimes. And I'm like, you know, it's not the news. It's more like the personal aspect. When I'm reading stories about news, policy, worldly affairs, that's not a big deal. But when I read about incessant behaviors, that's really, it's blackpilling. When you see, like, hey, we're experiencing the same problem again because people just do the same thing over and over again, it kind of feels like a human macro level problem that's intrinsic to humans. Like, why do people in New York keep voting for Ocasio-Cortez? Well, they don't read the news. They don't watch the news. They get their information from word of mouth. They don't pay attention. So they're trapped in this cycle. And I don't see that as ever changing. I really don't. Until maybe the pot boils over and it knocks off the stove or something. For the time being, AOC can say, like, oh, we got to have mask mandates. You know, Texas is killing people. And then go party in Miami because she knows her constituents won't read the news. And she gets away with it. So that's the kind of thing where I'm just like, man, all of this could stop. And we could make a Minecraft channel and just talk about, you know, I don't even know anything about Minecraft.
Creepers.
Yeah, creepers. Oh, they're getting to us. You know, it's you know. But instead, it's just like the same thing every day. We've been talking about censorship for a decade.
Ugh.
And it's been getting worse. We've been talking about, you know, many of these cultural issues, the banning of comedy for 5, 6, 7 years, and it just keeps getting worse. And at a certain point, it's like, are people going to keep behaving the exact same way? Is anything going to change? Or are we stuck in a loop? But maybe it's not a loop. Maybe it's a downward spiral that eventually just reaches the point where we're spinning so fast. I still
think the fact that we're still here is a victory. Mm-hmm. The fact that against all odds, the algorithm changes, the tweaks, the demonetizations, the just deliberate efforts to stop any kind of independent speech. The fact that there's still some resilient people out there building infrastructure, building their own bases is a victory in itself. And we're very blessed to still be here and still be able to still keep up the fight in some kind of way. Sorry, I cut you off there.
No, I was just saying that, like, let's remember also, like, we're talking about this COVID emergency state. Like, the world came together, governments came together, business came together, pharmaceuticals came together. We all, like, dramatically altered our lifestyles in ways that we've never done before. People were, you know, doing these masks, people were social distancing, there was lockdowns, all this happened. And like you said, we're still here, right? They developed vaccines. Most people have gotten through this. Thankfully, this disease is actually not very harmful for children at all. People are slowly waking up to that. We survived this much better than we have past pandemics, right? It's nothing like Spanish flu, so on and so forth. And I think that that's like a positive thing, right? Like, we can't get too down on ourselves and say that, oh, America reacted to this so poorly. You know, we're so stupid. You know, take the don't look up view of the United States. We can also look at the fact that we actually, the average American did tons of stuff in response to this that we'd never done before. A lot of us did kind of rise to some kind of calling, even if some of these policies were misguided. And we're all still here. Like, we survived this and we're going to survive this.
I'm actually fairly optimistic on where we're going in the future. I just feel like after 7 or 8 years of the same things happening over and over again, what I mean to say is the thing that's annoying and frustrating doing this job is that you hear the same stories on repeat. You know, sometimes they're slightly different. Sometimes they're just regurgitated and you just kind of wish people would learn and change their behaviors. But I think the issue is that humans are, human civilization is emergent. It's constantly in flux with younger people aging and dying and younger and then younger people coming in and taking over. So you end up with people like Vosh, for instance, who comes on this show and said he didn't know anything about the Obama administration because he was just a teenager. But now he's a major, you know, force in political commentary on the internet. Not the biggest channel in the world, but he's fairly large. He gets a lot of views. And he's having a conversation about politics when he wasn't around for what Obama had done, and Biden as well. So he's lacking that experience. Mm-hmm. That makes it impossible for humanity to effectively learn, in a sense. And not completely, just in some areas. However, I do think that people are going to get to a point where they just slam the table and say, I'm mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore. And that's why I think Democrats are resigning and retiring or planning to retire in huge numbers. But let's go to Super Chats.
Yes.
If you haven't already, we have a pinned message. Just smash the smash like. Smash the like button.
That made
sense. Give it a little tap. It's not supposed to make sense. It's, there's an old advertising technique. When you present something that is absurd to the brain, they're more likely to notice it.
Oh, I remember. Right.
Yeah, there was this thing I watched where it shows like an old ad from the 50s and there's a woman on a swing with three legs.
What?
Because it was like they wanted people to have it stick in their brain. Anyway, smash the like button, subscribe to the channel, share the show if you really do like it, and go to timcast.com. Become a member if you want to help support our work. We got a bunch of new merch. We got whacked shirts, the money sign whacked. You can check out a little skull. It's really cool. That's at the timcast.com store. And you can go to invertedworldbook.com if you want to pick up Timcast's first book. It's mysteries, murders, ghosts, paranormal, and a serial killer. Just tales of intrigue. And we're going to have a members-only segment up around 11 or so p.m. for all you guys. Let's read some Super Chats. First Super Chat, I can't read your name because YouTube blocks it. It says, it's the establishment versus the rest of us. Mm. Yep, the problem is when you have young people who aren't familiar with what the establishment is doing or has done, they end up supporting it, and then you're up against young progressives who are just brainwashed into thinking populists are the bad guys, even though they're somewhat populist. I don't know. All right. Seth says, why did Nunes resign? Do you guys know why Nunes resigned?
Mm-hmm.
He resigned because he's going to be with Trump Social.
Yeah.
Devin Nunes is going to be running Donald Trump's social media, the Trump Social platform. And my understanding is he believes that he will be more effective in helping get the word out and helping grow the Trump movement or just the populist right by working with social media and you know, getting past all the censorship. Joe Master says, good for Joe Rogan. I got suspended from Twitter for being mean to Keith Olbermann, LOL. Huh. You know what's funny about that? Is that Keith Olbermann is one of the meanest people just ever. Mm-hmm. He's just nasty.
Terrible.
Like, you got banned? How is he not banned?
Right.
I don't know. Have you guys ever interacted with him, Luke?
Thankfully not. it would be crazy if I did, especially with how flippant and emotional he gets and illogical. But there's a lot of people who spread a lot of medical misinformation. The CEO of Pfizer said a lot of things that were absolutely not true on Twitter, and he has yet to be held responsible
for it. Rachel Maddow,
Dr. Fauci. So many of these individuals lied through their teeth. They need to be held accountable for it. They haven't. It's crazy.
Rachel Maddow has spread so much dis and misinformation. It is laughable. If misinformation was a quarter, she would be able to go to the arcade. And she'd be able to play for a very long time. That's my best analogy I could come up with. It's insane. There's like a video that I tweeted about, and it's funny. You know what I love? I love on Twitter, I just post like, it's all ish posts. It's all like just trash, garbage posts. And the funny thing is when the media takes the bait and runs stories on them, takes it seriously, I tweeted, Rachel Maddow should be banned for this. I got my opinions from Twitch. Like, I was making a joke about left-wing streamers supporting massive private corporations controlling the flow of speech.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, I have people, like, leftists tweeting, like, Tim supports censorship! Well, if you're not smart enough to see through, I get it.
Clever.
Mm. All right. Everybody, congratulations. You are correct. We have Woot, do for you. Langoliers, Greg, the Langoliers, Rocco, the band. Langoliers, Rock Rocco. St. Miles, Langoliers, Kiwi, Langoliers, that's right. The reference I made earlier in the show as to why Ian is not here was a reference to Stephen King's The Langoliers.
I couldn't figure that out. I was like, why are people saying
that?
Did
you know that, Luke?
I thought you were talking about Lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, I that's why I was saying. Like, yep. I don't think you knew what you were talking about. The Langoliers, they're sleeping in a plane. They wake up and everyone's gone and like their clothes are all there. The plane went through a rip in the time-space continuum. And they're basically, time moves forward and the past is eaten by Langoliers. and they get like the whatever the thing that moves time forward, they go through, and so they're trapped in a past where everything's frozen. Like, nothing moves. Everything's stale. And then they see the Langoliers start destroying everything. So they're like, quick, get in the plane. And they fly the plane. And then the dude turns the pressure down so everyone passes out again. And then the plane, they wake up and they're back in reality or whatever. Yeah.
I like
Stephen King, man. Yeah. He's kind of a creepy dude, but he's got, you know, he's got some good stories, you know?
Good author. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Patriot Paladin says, Stephen King's Langoliers. Oh. Neokashi says, I see you've seen the Langoliers. Yeah, the movie they did was from a very long time ago. I don't know if you guys ever saw it. It was like the 90s. Cyonoise says, doing my part, I'm building decentralized social media, Defluencer on GitHub, live streaming videos, comments, blog, and more. Very cool. Yeah, that's one of the nonprofits that we're working on for this year is the On Foundation. Ian and many others are working really hard. And that is to create decentralized social media so that you will own your own website, social media system. No one can ban you but the individual pieces of the infrastructure. And then, you know, you'll be able to network with everybody without getting banned. Are you just yawning, Luke? I didn't know if you were going to.
Yeah, I'm yawning.
You're just yawning?
Yeah.
Fall asleep.
Raymond G. Stanley Jr. says, Tim, so you're telling us that last year was an off year. That means this year is an on year. All I can say is hide your kids, hide your wife. Yeah, everyone's going to get banned, man.
Be fun.
All right, 1,000,001 comments about the Langoliers. Roberto Lara says, Tim, don't forget the Large Hadron Collider is getting powered up this year with twice the power.
What?
There's already political memes, good and cringed in culture groups that I'm in. Also, Florida's governor race is this year, too. Really?
I didn't know that.
Florida's governor race is this year?
Oh, look that up.
So when I saw that video, the photos of AOC at that event with no mask on, people were cheering for her and, like, dancing. And I'm like, who are these Florida Democrats that like AOC, who supports mask mandates and vaccine mandates, but are in a state where they don't have that, won't abide by those rules, which they could choose to do if they want to? I don't understand. Help me out. What?
Nothing? Doesn't make sense.
Nobody knows?
That's a glitch in the Matrix.
A glitch in the Matrix.
It's a Hadron Collider.
People who like, want that to be happening, man.
Yeah, it is this year. It's November.
All right. Pioneer Smokehouses says, I was thinking a lot about what could trigger civil war, and I think moving voting control to the federal government could be bigger than pro-life issue. Is that, was it H.R. 1?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think they're probably referring to the voting bill.
Yeah. Do you know anything? Do you guys know anything about that?
No.
Nope.
No. Luke's just very quiet.
Yeah.
Well, they're trying to figure out a way to pass it because they can't get their filibuster on it, so.
Oh, that's right. They were talking about the filibuster.
Yeah. Nombot says, did you really just reference Langoliers? OMFG, I knew I loved you guys.
There you go.
Hunter's Crackpipe says, just say Hunter's Crackpipe is hard to put down. You know, there was an interesting point brought up about the picture of Hunter Biden with sleeping with a crack pipe in his mouth, that someone who was smoking crack would never fall asleep while doing crack.
Yeah, it's an
upper. I think my friend Justin told me this. Mm. Yeah, it's an upper. Yeah. Like, people who smoke, they're wired. They're crazy. Like
weed.
So they think that the photo may have been, like, someone screwing with them.
Hmm.
Or maybe it wasn't crack. Maybe it was something else. Maybe, like, a downer that he was also smoking.
I don't know. What could he have been smoking?
I don't know.
It was a crack pipe, dude.
I'm not sure.
Luke, are you familiar with?
I'm not.
You're making a reference. Just stop right there.
I'm not an expert in crackheads, to be honest with you. I try to keep my dealings as far away from them as possible.
All right. Michael Holder says, bring Nerd Roddick back or one of the Geeks and Gamers crew to school Luke on Game of Thrones. Love you, Luke, but not a Disney ending is a Stelter-level bad take.
Well, hey, that's your opinion?
Subjective.
Whatever, dude. Like, that's fine. I'm entitled to have my perspective, and you're entitled to have yours. Okay.
Cat's Claws. I'm just going to have to read it. He says, I don't like Ian. He's the main reason why I haven't subscribed to TimCast.com. Here's $10 for a great week without Ian. That was really nice. Thanks. Love having Luke around though. I like Ian. I think Ian's great. I think often Ian asks us moral questions that kind of break the echo chamber, and that's kind of the issue. I mean, it's difficult because obviously we don't want a bad show. If people are like, you know, unimpressed by Ian's either a lack of conversation or bad questions, then I would agree, like, it's an issue. But like, there were really good, there's been really great conversations that Ian, he's got views that many of us don't have, and it's good to have a different voice. I mean, Ian is for the death penalty, and he's like some hippie guy, and it's,
he has interesting views.
Yeah. But he's also asked us stuff that we don't normally think about, which I think is a good thing. He asked us, you know, we oppose the mandates, but would we oppose mandates for, like, if there was an Ebola going around?
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's a good question. He's like, if you really think about it, what's it called? Hemorrhagic fever?
Hemorrhagic fever, yeah.
Hemorrhagic fever, where you, like, bleed internally from the fever. Like, if people were just walking around, their eyes started bleeding, and they vomited blood and collapsed, I might be a little more like, I'm not going outside ever again, get out of my house. You know? I don't know.
Ian is...
No, I'm asking you about hemorrhagic fever, Luke.
I'm not an expert in hemorrhaging fever. I'm just
saying. Let me ask you the question. If people were walking around and started vomiting blood and bleeding from their eyes, would you be, like, for or against mandates?
Did they see, what's it called? That CNN, what's it, what's his name? Reliable Sources.
Yes.
Did they just see Brian Stetler? Whatever his name is. I'm against government doing anything. I don't give a damn what's going on. They're going to make the situation worse. They're going to figure out a way how eye bleeding is going to be monetized for them, and they would create a policy against eye bleeding, but they would make people bleed more from
eyes.
Goggles.
You know, I think I'd still be against it, though. I think, you know, we talked about it. I think I'd still be against it because it would self-regulate. If people were genuinely witnessing this stuff, they would absolutely, would self-isolate.
There
would be, there'd be no need for this, like, intense policy or anything.
As soon as the government says, don't do this, there's going to be a bunch of people who are going to want to do something. Like, people need to have personal responsibility, act on their own wills, and understand that the government is never going to come in and save you. This naive belief that the government's going to help you or watch out for you is absolutely idiotic. It has almost never happened in recorded human history. And the more you believe in that idea, the more of the fairy tale you put into that, give that power, the more you let yourself down and put yourself in danger.
All right. Planet says, Bannon's show plays the video on the Out to Commercial all the time.
Yeah, I mentioned that.
Oh, the Guo one?
Yeah, it's a song.
I don't know who this guy is. Other than there's been some stories about him, like, I guess he's like, what? He funds right-wing groups or something, or, like, right-wing projects?
No idea.
Chinese billionaire opposes the CCP.
First
is that
time
he's
hearing about him. Hook him up.
Settle Dench says, it's good to see that Ian survived an encounter with the Langoliers, and I'm excited to see him back on the show. Well, you know, he's just not here. I think he's actually in the building right now, but, you know.
Not yet.
No. Oh, he's not.
No, he won't be here until after the show.
I've been telling people, like, don't fly right now, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
Cause I've got family that are flying, and I was like, you're gonna get stuck.
Yeah.
They're canceling all of these flights.
Yeah.
I think it's really obvious. It's the holidays.
Yeah.
They tell everybody you've gotta get a negative test if you wanna do X, Y, or Z. Many people are like, I wanna make sure I get tested before I see grandma. So they all do. Then all of a sudden you get mass reporting of COVID of surging through the roof across the board. And then all of a sudden all the politicians are like, oh, geez, oh, no, lock everything down. And then these people who are working in the airlines, they're all like, oh, wow, I'm sick. I guess I can't come into work. So everything's just being shut down.
So one of the things that someone was pointing out, I forget where I heard this, but I guess if you say that you have a positive COVID test, you don't have to come into work. They can't do anything about it. You can just kind of call off consequence free. And I was like, that's kind of dangerous to incentivize that kind of nonsense. Really going to skew your numbers.
All right. Well, I think I asked for this, but we got a ton of super chats about the Langoliers. Maybe I should just do that in the beginning of every show.
Ask,
like,
questions.
Make a movie reference, because then people super chat and it's good for the show.
I love it.
All right.
I got to watch this now.
Mark Dello Russo says, what are your opinions on RFK Jr.'s controversial new book? I appreciate his work, but skeptical because the truth is often elusive.
Mm.
What do you think, Luke?
Absolutely. Great take. You should always be skeptical of everyone. And just because someone's on your side or someone has the same beliefs as you doesn't mean that they're always going to be correct and honest and upfront. I personally like RFK Jr. I think he does incredible work. I think he was also instrumental in bringing up a lot of the roundup important court legal cases that are happening right now. So for me, he's done a lot of good work. And I always try to judge a person by the fruits of their labors, and there's a lot of fruit, a lot of positivity, and a lot of good things that were brought on by this man, so he has a lot of credibility. About the assertions made about the real Anthony Fauci, I think there's a reason why it's one of the number one books on Amazon. Mm. I think it's very thought-provoking, and it's providing people a perspective of Dr. Fauci that is the complete opposite of what the media has portrayed him as. But if you want to be completely intellectually honest, you look at both perspectives, you make up your own decision after hearing them out, and then look at what evidence suggests to be the truth, and that should be the side that you should be on no matter what.
All right. McChilla says, winning the fight against mandates is our last chance at a nonviolent resolution to get our freedoms back. We've got to start winning local battles. I went in to pick up a to-go order and was turned away because I refused to wear a mask.
That's crazy. That,
you know, I was thinking we've got some plans for culture jamming. I don't want to say too much about what a lot of our ideas are, but I'm ready to just go full on. I don't even want to say civil disobedience, because I think we're going to work well within the system. Like, a good example would be buying a billboard.
Yeah.
Buying a billboard not to make a public statement where it's like, hey, we think mandates are bad, but like to call out individuals and politicians, to call out, let me just put it this way, in unique ways that would be very culture jamming. And I'll give you an example. The Yes Men. You guys know the Yes Men?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They did this very famous stunt where they cloned a Dow Chemical website, and then I think it was the BBC emailed the fake website saying, we want to get someone to come on and speak about the Bhopal disaster, where there's like a major chemical spill in India. I think it was in India. Mm-hmm. And then the activist goes on TV pretending to be from this major chemical company, and then says, we hereby take full responsibility for the disaster. We will be liquidating Union Carbide to pay for all of the damages and everyone. And it was like this huge moment. And then Dow was like, no, we do not accept. And it was like, that's serious culture jamming.
Well, they said they would be compensating the victims in this particular case, which made the stock go down dramatically and have the company issue a public announcement saying no, the victims here are not going to be compensated, which put them in a very difficult space. And I remember that moment. It was very, very big, and
yeah,
showed you what impact you can make.
So I'm thinking about that kind of stuff, you know, and I had some ideas, like what would happen if you went to a business that was like enforcing mandates and just hired someone to hold a sign in front of the business that said, sorry, we're closed. Like, make no reference at all to the business, make no reference at all to any mandates or any political statements. You just hire a guy, be like, stand right here, hold up a sign saying, sorry, we're closed. That's it. Nothing else. Like, is that it? They would all of a sudden be like, hey, how come no one's coming to our establishment anymore? So there's things like that. Now, I want to avoid actually going after the little guy in any way. So that's why we're looking at, you know, billboards and silly pranks and things like this that are all like not even civil disobedience, just, you know. Pranks is probably a better way to put it. Culture
jamming. Yeah, like, you know, like, wear your mask. Take this procedure because it worked so well the first time. You know, something like that I think would be pretty interesting.
We got some plans. I don't want to reveal them. But if I said them, people would probably start laughing and be like, I get it. But if I give you an example. So maybe this will be up on like Thursday or something on the vlog. So go to the Cast Castle vlog on YouTube. All right. Chris from Michigan says, I'm waiting for the apology from Dave for degrading himself by posing with Patton Oswalt.
Right.
So disappointing. He needs to do better.
Hey, yeah, there's a compelling case to make there.
Yep.
I love this one. Tyler says, did you notice there's no movie showings after 1-6, but only in blue states? I saw it on Decoy Voice, but what are your thoughts? More lockdowns. All right. I love this conspiracy theory.
What?
So I saw this online, and they were like, anyone notice that after January 6th, movie theaters are only showing one movie, and it's called The 355, which is like, I don't know, some rom-com or something.
Oh, yeah.
And then someone responded with, I think this means the feds are going to start, you know, locking down the country, or there's going to be an interstate travel ban. And I'm like, you got all that because movies haven't been announced yet? I'll tell you what I think's happening. I think it's a new year. And I think many of these websites haven't been updated with show listings. Hmm. That's it. Although I got to admit, I've never noticed this before. It could just be that people finally notice something that happens all the time. Mm-hmm. Every year on the first of the year, theaters haven't sent in their updated lists. And that could be normal. Finally, someone noticed it and everyone thinks it's a conspiracy. Or sure, I guess the government's going to be locking everything down, I suppose, but I really doubt it. All right, Ricardo says, Greetings from Brazil. This week, it's going to be voted if children 5 to 11 need to be vaxxed in Brazil. Also today, a 3-times Pfizer-jabbed journalist had a sudden cardiac arrest live. Oh, duck, snap. Duck it. Whoa, really? Wow. Yeah, man. Wow. Well, I can't say much about that because you need to look at larger data sets to understand if that matters. We've talked about the soccer players sort of, you know, passing out and collapsing. Dr. Malone said something interesting on Joe Rogan's podcast, and we're going to get into this in the members only segment because YouTube is ban heavy and that's kind of the problem. But one thing I think is interesting is that people need to understand when you see stories like this, it's possible COVID, long COVID is having this effect. Now, with that in mind, check out the members only segment because we're going to get into greater detail about what this means and how, you know, how it pertains to vaccines. Unfortunately, I got to be real with you. If YouTube is absolutely insane as it pertains to censorship, but we do have some plans. We've been thinking about how to push back with as crazy as YouTube is getting, especially in an election year. And so one of the things we're planning on doing is a Sunday special, a special Sunday episode. I don't want to call it Sunday special. That's what Ben Shapiro calls it, but a special weekend episode. And we're trying to figure out how we can do that within our current, you know, time frame and work schedule. So that way on iTunes, Spotify, and other podcast platforms, we will have like very serious, publicly available, free conversations that go beyond YouTube's stupid rules. We do this on the website with our articles, but we also have the members only segment, which is, you know, you got to pay for because we need to support the infrastructure. I'll also just tell you, it is really expensive to host those videos. It is really, really expensive. If we could host it all and give it away for free, we would. YouTube, when we do these shows, it's free for us. We don't pay YouTube to host this content, but that means we also have YouTube's rules. Mm. So the strategy then is, okay, we'll host our own videos, but it's really expensive. And so we need to basically be like, here's how much it costs to get access to this stuff. One solution is to put up a special episode every weekend on other platforms. Like it'll probably be on Rumble. It'll probably be exclusive on Rumble and then also on iTunes, Spotify. So we're trying to figure it out. We'll see if we can get to it. I don't think I have, all the solutions worked out just yet, but.
There's also a video going around alleging showing citizens beating up a local mayor who mandated vaccine passports to eat and mandatory vaccinations for children. And that video is going around allegedly showing that mayor getting his buttocks carefully hit.
There's a feud, I guess, between Marjorie Taylor Greene and Dan Crenshaw. Did you see this?
No, I did not.
Raymond G. Stanley says MGT. Is it MTG or Crenshaw? I don't know, man. I don't know.
Isn't Crenshaw like a liberal now? Like, didn't he like that's what I've been seeing all over social media.
He supported red flag laws, didn't he?
Yeah.
He denied that though.
A neocon. I think so. Yeah.
I don't know. He had this video. He had this podcast clip where he was like, he said something about Americans who rag on endless war being like ill-informed or something. I think it was taken a little bit out of context, but I think it wasn't out of context enough for me to defend the guy. I think, you know, he's been fairly war hawkish.
Yeah.
So people are calling him the new John McCain or whatever.
He still would be interesting to have on the show and to have a real discussion with.
Open invite. Yeah.
Yeah.
Horace Dunn says, Tim, you absolutely nailed Skeletor voice. When did I do the Skeletor voice?
I don't know.
It wasn't on this episode.
Oh, previously. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does
I don't
Skeletor
know. Probably.
Say?
I wouldn't be able to do it unless I had like a way to do it. I will say though, my friends, I am, my lifelong dream. It's been accomplished. I can retire happily now. I have an IMDb as a voice actor. I am the voice of Dr. Anthony Fauci.
Yes!
For Freedom Tunes.
So good.
And you know, I was thinking about it, I'm like, Seamus has got a big channel. I mean, he gets 500,000 views.
You're famous.
Like, yeah, like, think about this. How many people can say they're a voice actor on a cartoon show that regularly hits 500,000 viewers?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I'm not just the voice of Fauci on one episode. I'm on like 7. And then I'm also SJW's friend, and I voice myself.
Yeah.
So childhood dream of doing voice acting. There it is. I'm in a cartoon show.
Nailed it.
Seamus hit me up like a couple weeks ago with the new Fauci one where he comes down the chimney. And he was like, bro, I need a huge favor. Like, can you read this script?
Oh, my gosh.
And it was at like, you know, noon or whatever. And I was like, sure. And it's the one where Fauci comes down and kidnaps people because there's too many people at a family gathering. But without Seamus directing, it's really hard to do because I don't know exactly what his vision is. So I had, without him there, I just had to read it like 10 different ways over several minutes so he could try and figure out which, you know, inflection and which, you know, speed made sense. I thought it was very, very hilarious though. But anyway, yeah. Maybe Seamus will finally realize that I can do a ton of voices. And I don't just have to be Anthony Fauci.
Yeah, Seamus.
Although I have a lot of fun voicing Anthony Fauci. How did I end up doing that role?
I don't know.
I think Seamus was here, and then I started doing the Fauci voice.
Yeah.
And then he was like, can you record something?
Yeah, heck yeah.
All right, here we go. Brandon H. says, Guo Wengui predicted Jack Ma's disappearance. Check out August 2019 interview with Kyle Bass on Real Vision Finance. Luke, we are change. We'll love it.
What's the video again? I'm going to look it up.
August 2019 interview with Kyle Bass on Real Vision Finance. Guo Wengui. Wengui?
I'm writing that
Wengui?
Down.
Wengui? I don't know. All right. Raymond G. Stanley Jr. once again, he says, Tim, guys, I'm worried if Trump wins, the left will go completely nuts. If it's any other candidate, they'll go a little crazy. What do y'all think? I think if Trump runs and wins, they'll literally try to secede from the union.
Good.
We already saw that sentiment coming out. I mention all the time the Boston Globe. I mean, and Antifa is going to be like, now's our chance.
That'll be fun.
All right.
No more input, I guess.
Everyone completely agrees with me.
That's
just
right.
100, 100 percent agrees. Waffle Sensei says, the best scene ever of Don't Look Up is when the Bill Gates character gets called a businessman. I was losing it. Oh, was that a reference to something?
I don't know
if that was a reference, but he was clearly one of the big tech giants, and a lot of people say he was Bill Gates because of his voice and because of the sweaters, and I absolutely agree.
I think it was Steve Jobs. The turtleneck was very Steve Jobs.
That was the presentation, too.
He was an amalgamation of those people.
Yeah.
Paul Wallace says, Ian is a good guy. While he is a little off and he sometimes gets stuck on semantic arguments, he does bring a unique perspective. Much love, you and crew. When we did the special event, we had like 100 and something people at the bar.
Oh, yeah.
And then I mentioned, I was like, Ian often brings up, you know, gets involved in semantic arguments, which I hate. And everyone started cheering and clapping. Like, that's the problem. It's not a real argument to be like, I think this word means that word. And it's like, dude, let's have a conversation about ideas and not the meanings of words. Yikes. William Ward says, crack is not an upper. Rolled with people that did it, they basically become drooling zombies.
Huh.
Is that true? I know people who did crack. They became hopped up. Like, they were like, woo!
So, yeah. I have a source that says if you do enough of these stimulants, eventually you'll crash out, which makes sense because your body can only do so much.
Well, crackheads are like mystical figures. They have, you know, godlike powers as well, and also the ability to like pass out everywhere. So,
yeah. Pretty impressive.
Okay, let's see what we got here. I just had the YouTube jump happen.
No.
That's the worst.
That's the jump.
Yeah. So when super chats load all at once, it just throws everything up. But I appreciate all the super chats, guys. Things You May Not Hate says, hi from Warsaw. Love you, Luke, especially. And the little heart emoji.
Aww.
I sent you guys a pitch. Forrest Trump stole the... Oh, okay. Well, Luke, do you have a message in Polish to all of our Polish?
Dziękuję bardzo. Kurde, trzeba walczyć za wolność, albo tam nam ukradną wszystko, co mogą.
Beautiful.
What is that? What did you say?
I'm scared.
You don't want to know.
No, that's
what I thought. saying YouTube.
I can't tell. You got to learn Polish to find out.
Oh, snap.
Dzień dobry.
That's one way to get around the YouTube censorship.
Oh, yeah, right?
Throwing out different languages, make them work for it, for the censorship.
Yes.
Something interesting, when I was in Egypt, the Egyptians thought the British guys I was with were German. It was really weird. And so they told me, like, if you speak with a British accent, they'll just think you're speaking with a German accent, I guess. And then they won't think you're American. But they can tell you're American based on the American accent. It's really weird. So they were like, just use an accent when you speak to us and they won't notice. That was the craziest thing. Yeah, it seemed to have worked, I guess.
That's really weird.
I just talked like this. Crikey, mate.
Oh, my
gosh.
And
then, like, no one had any idea. They were like, I don't know where that guy is. No, I didn't really
this
do that.
Crazy.
I was just like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. Cornelius Buttknuckle says, I've seen many a crackhead that have been up for many a day, and they do get to a point that if they've been up for so long, their bodies start to force them to sleep.
Yeah.
I legit seen one guy fall asleep with the pipe in his mouth. You know what? That makes a lot of sense.
You pass out. Yeah.
Maybe he was up for like 3 days.
Yeah, that'll
and then
do
finally
it.
Just like, what happens to someone to make him go like that? You know, like Hunter Biden. to he's like a wealthy family. You know what I mean?
It's the wealth that does it.
Affluenza.
Yeah.
I gotta say, you know, I know a lot of people in the suburbs of Chicago, and they were like from well-off families, bored, and they just do drugs all the time.
Yeah.
And it was weird.
The rulers of like the UAE and Saudi Arabia, like they're always partying. Like, They're all like Hunter Biden, but like way more successful. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I think a lot of these people, they like chase those kind of pleasures and
yeah, decadence.
All right, we got one more here. We got one more. This is Tech says, you fired Ian. No, Ian, I peeing.
Oh, no.
No, we didn't fire Ian.
He'll be back.
Ian's flight was delayed. He has returned, thankfully, safely. And so he's not in the building yet, though?
Not quite yet. Yeah.
Nah.
About an hour.
About an hour?
Yeah.
That's crazy. He was supposed to be here super early in the morning.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, wow. Okay, but he landed.
Right, yeah.
Wow, nine. That's nuts. I thought they said he was going to get here at 9.
We should have man. Ian Cam.
Yeah, we do need Ian Cam. Like,
where in the world is Ian?
Ian Tracker.
It'd be funny if, like, when Ian doesn't realize people are watching him, he's, like, a totally different person. He's, like, a stodgy, staunch conservative suit wearing with his hair tied back and like no glasses.
Cardigan.
And he's got an accent.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Go over to TimCast.com, become a member. We're going to have a members-only segment talking about some very serious issues. Sometimes, often, and I think this will broach, it's we'll just call it spicy. I'll leave it there. Go to TimCast.com. Member segment will be up around 11 or so p.m. Smash the like button. Subscribe to this channel. Share this stream right now. Grab that URL. Share it wherever you can. If you really do like the show, it really does help. It will help us compete with the likes of all these big mainstream media companies. We have no marketing. None whatsoever. I thought about this. Maybe it's a mistake. We do have a marketing guy for like posting stuff on social media. And he was like, did you do any marketing? And I was like, never. He's like, it's all organic. And I'm like, yeah, I guess. And it's like, wow. And I'm like, okay, maybe we should do ads. Cause like other big channels have done ads. We've never done that. Maybe we should do something like that. But in the meantime, you guys can just share it if you like it.
Yeah,
and if you do, then I suppose we deserve the views. So, also follow the show, Timcast IRL on like every platform. You can follow us on Instagram, where we post clips from the show. You can follow me on Instagram at TimCast, where I just post memes and other garbage and just, I don't know, I just post trash, whatever. Zed, do you want to shout anything out?
Yeah, I mean, we're still, my friend Sean Misropian and I, we're still writing at inquiremore.com on Substack, and I'm contributing to a range of different, you know, outlets in addition to that. I try to put this stuff out on my Twitter as well, just my first name and last name. So
what is it?
It's Z-A-I-D-J-I-L-A-N-I. That's my Twitter. So
sweet. Zed, thanks for coming on. I released a pretty interesting video on youtube.com/wearechange about the shifting tides. I just released another masterclass on lukeuncensored.com and another video on Robert Malone, specifically talking about the Indiana life insurance CEO and his comments about the 40% excess deaths in certain age groups. So if you want to see that video, lukeuncensored.com. Hope to see some of you guys there. Thanks for having me.
Thank you guys for tuning in for this first show of the new year. It's going to be a doozy of a year. I'm feeling very positive. I'm just really intrigued to see what happens. Thank you guys for joining us as we start this new journey. You guys may follow me on Twitter, where I post a bunch of nonsense just like Tim, 24/7 pretty much, at Sour Patch Lids. Yeah, I forgot my handle. There you go. Timothy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see you guys over at TimCast.com. Thanks for hanging out.
Bye, guys.